Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We're off and running for this 11th day of December 2020. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to, help out with the funding of the program. Remember, there's still a fantastic Katz's Delicatessen Challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve in New York. A brand new $15 a month subscriber gets a pound of magnificent corned beef, pastrami, brisket, hard salami, or soft salami, your choice, courtesy of Steve in New York. Thank you, Steve. That just sounds freaking delicious. It really, really does. And also, if you'd like to be augment your listening experience, run on over to headon.live and, click on chat room. And if you never have before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. You'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and our buddy Roger in Oregon, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, even though he is a third stage guild navigator, has elected not to fold space here on this Friday on the front porch. And there's Lou in PA jumping into the chat room. Howdy, Lou. And so we're all set for Friday on the front porch. Remember, here in about an hour, I'll open up the conversation that takes place in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves and around which we gather each and every Friday, capably moderated by, again, Sparky, who has moderated the Friday on the Front Porch conversation for oh so very long. And we will have a fantastic conversation, because they almost always are. Yes. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. Thanks to everybody who helped finish up Chris in Germany's Fuck Trump and Fuck Moscow Mitch and the whole GOP challenge. Thank you so much. Thank you to our 11th day of the month subscribers. That's John and Chris. Thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to Tony and Chico. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program, and hopefully we'll add one more partial sponsor name if somebody would like to get their hands on that fantastic Katz's Delicatessen offer. Yum, yum. Trust me, when it comes to getting meat through the mail, that's way, way, way better than, say, some godforsaken Trump steak cut from some downer cow in some CAFO feedlot. There's that. That's a possibility. And the fundraising goal sits at $600 this evening. That's all of yesterday and all of today, and we will be fully funded for the week. And if we can get fully funded for the week, it'll make next week ever so much less stressful. Let's see, a couple of early emails. I had a question from Kevin in Colorado Springs. Subject line, vaccines. If you were to have a choice in which of the vaccines you could take, which would it be, the AstraZeneca or the Moderna? I would go with the Pfizer-BioNTech, because at least it was not tainted to any significant degree by the machinations of this godforsaken maladministration via its stupid warp speed program. So there's no there's a very low possibility of there being any Trump graft involved with the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine. Yeah. So there's the answer to that one. But I won't be seeing any vaccine for quite some time, because there are people who are deemed to need it much worse, you know, friends of Trump, things like that. No, seriously, frontline healthcare workers, people who are in long-term care facilities, and much more likely to be exposed. Yeah. What else? Let's see. Had a note from Kyle. Serious question. Can the American Fascist Party actually stop the election of Joe Biden by trying to hold up the inauguration, or is this just more bullshit to show their base they really are the fascists their base wants? The fuck is going on in this country? Jesus Christ. We're so far down the rabbit hole, Kyle, that I don't know how to answer that question. And we'll probably be going into it further later in the program. So if you don't mind, I will defer further the description or discussion on that until we just move all the way into that particular topic. And this, of course, Bob, Lean on Me. Last night's conversation with Darlene was priceless. Thanks for calling in, Darlene. Oh, God, Jeffrey's at it already. We owe you, Darlene, for all that wisdom, but please, Darlene, don't put a lien on the show for what we owe, because we're having enough trouble keeping this project financially funded as it is, so damn it, go to headon.live and contribute to the show. Not you, Darlene, everybody else, you do plenty. Nice going, Jeffrey. Now Lee in New York is going to email and complain about your puns again. Yeah, but that just means Tom in sunny San Rafael will write in and say, no, 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 keep the puns a-coming. By the way, Lee, in New York, Giraffrey speaks very highly of you. I don't know why you had to take issue with his puns last night. Giraffrey often stays up all night to come up with these top-down puns. Top-down? Jeffrey's very fond of Lee because Lee stands well over 6 feet 3 inches, and Lee has an acumen that reaches the tallest of the trees. I actually met Lee on Saturday, June the 11th, 2016, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, when Tara Devlin invited us all to gather together at an Irish bar when Mike, Kathy, and Molly Malloy were in New York because Molly had a singing engagement at Carnegie Hall. We all had a fun time as Sam Cedar also showed up later in the afternoon, and speaking of liens, there was a huge elderly fellow who weighed 300 pounds if he weighed a pound, sitting next to me at the bar. He was so drunk he started literally falling over and leaning on me. So I leaned back, attempted to push him back up in his chair, and tried to prop him up so he would not continue to fall. And by the way, Darlene says, LOL. Thanks, Giraffrey! I just love this community. I do. But anyway, to continue. I would have had Jeffrey help, but he remained in the car during all of the admiring all of the tall buildings in Manhattan. Once again, this huge man starts leaning my way and falling toward me, but this time he was slobbering all over me. This is pre-Rona, remind you. Yeah, I needed help getting this drunk lug off me, and that's when I hollered for Lee, the tallest man I could see, for help. Lee came over and just looked at me and said, "You guys need to get a room." Well, eventually I couldn't prop him up anymore, and he fell on the floor and passed out. Really didn't care at that point, because Kathy announced she was giving out a prize for the person that traveled the furthest, and the prize was her homemade organic grape jelly, and yes, I won. I was thrilled, and just then Lee came over to congratulate me, but he questioned if I actually drove all that way just to meet Mike Malloy that day. Yes, Lee, I made that 7-hour drive just to meet Mike, because at that point I've been listening to him for 10 years, and tomorrow I'm driving to Mike Malloy's neighborhood in Georgia to campaign for Warnock and Ossoff for the runoff election on January 5th and get some more of that organic grape jelly. Yes, Jeffrey. Suggestion from Jeffrey. All right, Lee, the next time I'm in New York, we should get together. I'll bring Joey, and you bring your favorite musical instrument. Joey plays the keyboard, and I, Giraffrey, play the trembita, which is the longest wind instrument known to man. and animal, because I, Jeffrey the giraffe, have the longest windpipe in the land. Yes, Lee, let's us three get together and we will have a, wait for it, we will have a jam session. It just never slows down. Jam session. The goddess of irony was at it again last night, Bob, when I mentioned that I was fine with anybody correcting my journals. Just then you made a correction when you explained that Lenny and Of Mice and Men was not dumb but rather mentally challenged. I should have realized that, considering my wonderful mother taught the mentally challenged for 32 years. She's a saint, as she taught all those children all those years, and to this day she's still trying to teach me. Good job, Mom. I love you. We all love you, Joey's mom. Speaking of New York and definitely dumb, that would be dumb Donald Trump, who on this day in 1990 was served divorce papers in his Manhattan office by his then-wife, Ivana. Yes, dumb Donald just weeks earlier decided to take Ivana on a ski trip, but he also flew in his floozy, Marla Maples, who later became his wife, also on the very same ski trip, and Maples stayed in the very same hotel. Finally, then, there's Lamar Alexander playing Christmas carols in the halls of Congress when one in five children are going to bed hungry, and many more will not have a Christmas at all because of his Republican assholes who only want to sponsor a bill that will financially feed the wealthy. Jeffrey chimes in. Lamar, you are not Alexander the Great. You, Lamar Alexander, great, G-R-A-T-E, on the American people is the meaning of your kind of great, G-R-A-T-E, literally means to reduce something, especially food. You racist cracker, you. The only song you should be singing is the theme song from All in the Family with Archie Bunker. And you knew when you were who you were then. Girls were girls and men were men. Mister, we could use a man like Herbert Hoover again. Didn't need no welfare state. Everybody pulled his weight. G.R. LaSalle ran great. Those were the days. Oh, God, I can hear people clicking away even as I... Why do you make me sing, Joey and Giraffery, damn it? This has been Joey's Journal for Friday on the Front Porch, December the 11th, 2020, with Giraffery helping jam the Republican Party's lean on this country's future. And that's a vigorous cowbell. And with that announcement, yes, there's a $100 challenge. Courtesy of Joey and Giraffery. And this is a biggie. In this case, if we raise $100, then Joey and Giraffery double it and send $100 to Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff. So you're actually making your money work three times as hard. So $100 Jam the Republican Party Lean Challenge is on the table. And the cat is in the studio. Just a minute, please. Sorry about that, but I just didn't want her walking across and reprogramming the stream or anything like that. That has been known to happen. So anyway, jamming the Republican lean on this country's future challenge is on the table, and that's awesome. Thank you, Joey, and thank you, Giraffery. Thank you very kindly. And if that's met, then we'll be down to $400 to finish the week, and that's huge. Thank you. Thank you very, very, very kindly. Now, other stuff. Oh, may I remind you, says Brother Deacon Asa, subject line Giraffery's puns. May I remind you, Boss Man Bob, that those cowbells are reserved for quality puns and sundry clever stuff. When they're bad puns, you need to simply call out, "No, I won't do that." That's gnur. The word is gnur. Trying to make me say... Right. Thanks for remembering me, says Lee in New York. Most people deny knowing me. Sorry if I wasn't helpful, Joey. No, I will not make frequent complaints about puns. I gave my opinion once. I like strong cowbells. I understood. And Billable Rick wants an extra cowbell for Joey and Giraffe. They go so far for their puns, Billable says. But I like them. So, where to begin this evening? Well, again, remember, there's a button at the top of the headon.live page. Click it. It'll carry you straight into the Friday on the Front Porch chat room, and you'll be ready when we start the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable conversation here in, just a scant 45 minutes or so. Well, I have some news out of our community. And it's frustrating and worrisome news. Our buddy Trey in Kentucky, Stan, wrote me just before the program, just before we went on air here. We, me and that mouse in my pocket. No, we, us, our community. And he said, you may recall earlier this week that that Trey let us know that he was quarantining at home because, as he said, my manager doesn't know how to wear a mask and her husband both have the virus. In point of fact, she had it since Monday and didn't tell anybody. That was back on December the 3rd, he was telling us that. She refused to wear a mask because Merca. And he noted she was a chin strap mask person. Well, they had it. And now our buddy Trey has it. And I heard that, and it just pisses me off. All in the world that was necessary. All in the world that is necessary to reduce the horror of this pandemic, this Trump pandemic, this Don-demic, is for people to put on a mask and maintain social distance and wash their hands. That's it. That's all. But people like Trey's maggot manager, well, they can't be bothered. And yet Trey lives in a state that has a mask mandate, where it is actually an order from the government to wear a mask for public health purposes so as to protect the community. But these howling, spoiled, rotten, stinking babies can't be bothered. And I am at one and the same time furious over this and worried for our buddy Trey. Trey says so far that he's got some good cough medicine and he's just trying to make sure he keeps breathing. Two other people at his place of work are sick too, thanks to the mask hole COVIDiot manager. He says, I can't taste or smell anything. I've got a dry cough, and I'm really tired. And, hopefully, Trey, you're young, you're strong, and you'll get through this and just be miserable for a little bit and then be back up and at it. I wish I could say that somebody was coming to give you that Ragnarok cocktail that Rudy and Ben Carson, friend of Jesus. I mean, why did Ben Carson take that shit? He's a friend of Jesus. He's got a portrait of him walking hand in hand along the beach at sunset. What need did he have with actual 21st century medicine? But I wish somebody was coming with the cocktail and maybe a healthy dose of dexamethasone. Remember, Nitwit Nero said that that stuff made him feel like Superman to the point that he wanted to tear his shirt off with it and have a Superman shirt on. Jesus, because he's three. Yeah, but there's a larger point to this. We talk about law thingies from time to time here, and this is one of those moments. In the law, relative to injuries and damages in the workplace, there is an old doctrine. It's Latin, of course. Respondeat superior. And what respondeat superior means is let the superior, the master, respond. Because this is a segment of law known as master and servant. And it means that in a case, let's say you both work at Amalgamated Widget, and during the course and scope of work, your coworker, Hank Thumbfingers, accidentally drops a sledgehammer on your foot and breaks some toes. Well, the first thought is, you know, better sue Hank. No. The law of master and servant says that since it was in the course and scope of work, that the master must respond, that the employer must respond, and thus respondeat superior. Well, here we've got precisely that situation. Our buddy Trey is sick. Our buddy Trey is sick with the Rona, and we're all rooting for him and hoping the very best for him. And he's sick with the Rona because the manager at his place of employment scoffed at public health regulations, refused to properly wear a mask, had the virus and didn't tell anybody, and gave the virus to Trey and two of his coworkers. By the way, I have Trey's permission to tell everything I'm telling. I don't want anybody thinking that I'm just invading his privacy. I'm not. Now, theoretically, because this is a matter of gross indifference to people's well-being, it rises above mere negligence. And because the manager is not the head of the corporation or the company or the whatever entity it is, Trey's recourse would be as to the company, not the stupid maggot manager. And I mention all of this because this is the very heart and soul of why the tyrant Mitch McConnell is allowing American families to flap in the breeze and be hung out to dry and suffer at this time of year in particular. Winter coming on, heating bills needing paid, other utility bills to be paid, and nothing, not a sausage. Oh, the Senate did manage to pass the defense authorization bill today. COVID Caligula's been threatening to veto it, you know, because President Toddler. But we got nothing in the way of a stimulus bill. I mean, there's a $908 billion bill out there that people would like, some people would like to see passed, and it's better than nothing. I mean, it's better than nothing in a way, in the sense that here's nothing, and here's this bill that doesn't have any $1,200 check in it, doesn't have a whole lot of other stuff in it, and it's right next to nothing. So it's better than nothing, but next to nothing. And the reason we can't even pass that is because a million or so Kentuckians reelected Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell, whether you like it or not, rules you from the office of the Senate Majority Leader. That is why I refer to him as the tyrant Mitch McConnell, because he is one. And the reason he's hanging everybody out to dry is because he wants specific language in any stimulus bill, any relief bill, that says that people like Trey's employer have no responsibility whatsoever when they failed to adequately make sure that their workers wore masks, maintained social distance, and didn't spread the goddamn virus hither, thither, and yon like Typhoid Mary. This is not some outlandish legal theory. This is the settled law of 100 or more years. And Mitch McConnell wants to upend it so that people who, like the company that did this to our friend Trey, don't have any responsibility for it. Well, I tell you what, I love those Republicans, don't you? If it's you and me, they're all out there hollering, oh, we got to have personal responsibility. But by God, it's a different world if you're the corporate donor class, isn't it? Jesus Christ. So I thought it would be worthwhile to take note of that situation so everybody can send their positive energy winging toward Trey, but also to put a real world face on what it is that Moscow Mitch is doing to the American people.
Well, I mean, we can't have people suing just because of the Rona. Oh, it'll bankrupt America.
No. Might bankrupt some corporations, but it's not like the bankruptcy law doesn't protect them in a big way. Because according to Moscow Mitch, our buddy Trey should have no recourse whatsoever against the people who hurt him. Maliciously, malignantly, grossly negligently, perhaps even recklessly, indifferently hurt him. And so it is that from day to day to day, we suffer under the lash of Moscow Mitch. Now, the other story, or another story, you know, it's been said so many times that history may not repeat itself, but it certainly does rhyme. And this is one of those cases. It seems to be the vogue currently to make comparisons between now and, say, 1860. And here's one that just leapt off the page at me. After he was elected president in the 1860 election, and Abraham Lincoln was only elected president because the Northern Democrats couldn't get together with the Southern Democrats and agree on a single candidate because the issue of slavery had finally reached a boiling point at which point the pressure could no longer be reduced or moderated. And so along comes Abraham Lincoln, and because the part of the Democratic Party was split, for the first time ever, the Republicans, a party that was formed out of know-nothings and the know-nothing party and the remnants of the Whigs and whatnot, well, they become the Republican Party, and they're born in a log cabin in Wisconsin a few years prior. So Lincoln gets elected. The Confederate states immediately begin to grunt and bark and hoot about states' rights. And they begin passing ordinances of secession and things like that. And back then, the president was inaugurated in March, not January. The January inaugural was only a product of FDR's election, when it was necessary, the country was suffering so grievously toward the end of Hubert Hoover's reign that they decided to move the inauguration to January from March so that FDR could get at least a little bit of a head start on trying to address the problems of the nation. But back in 1861, the inauguration was in March. And prior to his inauguration, and this is no exaggeration, Abraham Lincoln literally had to sneak from Baltimore, Maryland, into Washington, D.C. on a special train. He was guarded by the early Pinkertons, who would eventually become, at least an offshoot of them, would become the forerunner of the Secret Service. And he had to sneak into Washington, D.C., because there were all kinds of Southern terrorists. We didn't have that word back then, but by God, it applies. Who wanted to kill him before he could even become president. And so he snuck from Baltimore into Washington, D.C., and hid out in one of the few hotels there. I think it was the old Willard. Well, now we have something similar. This coming Monday, the electors will gather in their several state capitals, and they will cast their electoral votes in the presidential election, making it official. Of course, it won't be any big deal in a place like Talabama or Tennessee or Arkansas or Mississippi Stan or Texas Stan or Louisiana Stan, any of the old Confederacy states, or places like Idaho, Talibandiana, whatnot. But in those states that have cast their ballots, in those swing states, which are only swing states because of the Electoral College, again, let's just remember that. In states like Georgia and Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, efforts are already underway to terrorize the Biden electors. And it's gotten to the point where the Biden campaign has had to reach out to each of those electors of theirs and give them logistical information and even have backup plans in case the maggots try to prevent them from arriving at their respective state capitals in Atlanta, Harrisburg, Lansing, Madison, etc. That's in direct parallel, that is a direct parallel with 1861. trying to stop a legitimate democratic process because because they are aggrieved in their ignorance. Marseille Allen is a Biden elector from Michigan and said, I do expect there to be some confrontation on Monday because that's just how these unpatriotic so-called Americans have been behaving. And it's disappointing. But as an African-American and indigenous woman, I'm not surprised at this behavior. So there's a security plan in place to protect the electors, most of whom say that they have undergone a steady, relentless stream of abuse and harassment from the maggots, who, among other things, are barking and grunting and hooting their QAnon conspiracy theory. In Pennsylvania, Representative Malcolm Kenyatta of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives said it's really been unrelenting. Some are form emails. Some people might send a form email, but they spiced it up with their own language. I got one today. This one talks about us laundering kickbacks through kids. And again, that's straight out of the QAnon playbook. And they are excited, though, because they're doing, well, it's like what I said about voting for Joe Biden, even here in West Virginia. It was the single most patriotic thing I'd ever done in my life. Trying to save this nation, even though it was a futile effort here in West Virginia. Doing my part to try to save this nation from the clutches of an intellectually damaged madman. And so Sharif Street, a Biden elector and a state senator in Pennsylvania, said, if you tackle the guy handing out the Lombardi Trophy, it doesn't change the outcome of the game. But that's way too intellectually nuanced, I guess, for your average QAnon maggot and anti-American fascist jackass. You know, you can find the story over at Politico. Politico interviewed 25 Democratic electors in five states that Biden flipped from 2016. And they're trying to leave nothing to chance. They want to make sure that every one of the electors can get to where they need to be in order to cast their Electoral College vote. Wouldn't it be nice to live in a country where there wasn't any such thing as an Electoral College, and simply the popular vote would be enough to establish who the hell the president was? The Biden campaigns had to deal with transportation issues, the aforementioned backup plan, logistics. Tim Smith, an elector in Michigan, told Politico, just like you guys know December 14th is a day, all those guys know it too. Jocelyn Benson, Secretary of State in Michigan, was subjected to people gathering and threatening and abusing and harassing her at her home over the weekend. And according to the police, some of them were packing heat, you know, carrying their freedom protectors. And so it seems that the distance between 1861 and 2021, 160 years, or just short of it, 159, 2020, ciphering problems. Is it so great after all? Back then, no electricity, very little in the way of, if anything, of running water. Machine gun had yet to be invented, or flight. It would be another 14 years before Alexander Graham Bell created the telephone. for all I know, Thomas Edison was still being referred to as an idiot by his teachers. But despite our, despite the so-called progress of the modern era, well, for all in places like Georgia, it is very likely that some of the very same people harassing Biden electors are the direct descendants of people who took up arms against the United States and committed treason. And by God, the apple falleth not far from the tree. No, it doesn't. One Biden campaign official told Politico, "We've played among the most active roles in making sure the slates are comprised as we would like them to be, making sure the electors are capable and ready to do their responsibility, making sure that people are prepared to be where they need to be on that date. And if they're not, we're prepared with alternatives who are ready to go to cast the ballot if needed." Yeah. And on top of that, they have to try to make sure that where the electors gathered don't turn into COVID-19 hotspots. Meanwhile, when Politico reached out to the MAGOT campaign, they refused to say anything about what Monday was going to mean for them. So, Monday, Jesus. Well, by the time we gather together on Monday, well, we'll probably be talking about some sort of antics earlier in the day. Bless his heart, and I mean that in a good way. Rick Bloomingdale, who's president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and is another of the Commonwealth's 20 electors, said, they know it'd be futile to try to change my mind. I don't know if I need any instructions on how to be safe. I'm in the labor movement. I have people threatening me all the time. True enough. This is probably amateur hour for him. So, damn. 159 years and some things don't freaking change. Yeah, adding a little bit of detail, James in Illinois notes, Lincoln had to sneak through Baltimore to get to D.C. He was coming from New York. There was no train around Baltimore in those days. Nope, and Baltimore was no place that Lincoln particularly wanted to be. It, too, was a hotbed of treasonous secessionism. Notes coming in for Giraffe. Dave in the Blind says, to the funny giraffe, I wish to note, misquoted the get thee to a punnery, go. Ooh, well played, get thee to a punnery. Yep. And our buddy Shorty in L.A. noted, they're all punny to me. Oh, you guys. I know. And speaking of references to the Civil War, in Bill Pascrell's letter to Nancy Pelosi, as our buddy Jug of Punch points out, Bill Pascrell referred to Reconstruction-era constitutional safeguards to cleanse from our government ranks any traitors and others that would destroy the Union. That's who they are. Damn straight. And because we have to have something to laugh at, this courtesy of Ralph's. Breaking, Trump has filed an emergency lawsuit to overturn the results of the Time magazine Person of the Year after losing to Joe Biden.
It's good.
And a note coming from Suman. Question, QAnon. I think we all know that we, i.e. the United States, have the ability to take down power by the click of a few buttons in the Pentagon. So why is it so hard for, let's say, the FBI to track down these online terrorists? What am I missing? Well, they have to want to first. And this is an FBI that is run out of the Department of Justice that is headed by Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr. So it becomes a matter of will. And then there's the other thing. I offer up a recurring cowbell to our buddy Scott in San Diego for the following. Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're all fit to lose our minds. Because that's a thing now. You know that there was an announcement that they've been looking into his taxes. Gee, I wonder how that happened. You know, over in Delaware, via the, you understand. But the fact of the matter is, Scott was right way back when he offered that up the first time. We're going to be Hunter Biden'd for the next God knows how many years. Because it's just another bullshit conspiracy theory that was generated out of the fever swamp minds of the wingnut welfare right wing. And so now you've got people, maggots, who are hooting and barking and grunting for Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr to appoint a special counsel to bark and hunt and grunt and hoot and whatever about Hunter Biden for the foreseeable future, 4 years or perhaps eight, depending on what happens in 2024. Because it would be the same sort of rat fuck as he recently pulled with John Durham, making sure that John Durham would be around grunting and hooting about Crossfire Hurricane for 4 or 8 years, and periodically going and getting his brief expanded to, including but not limited to Crossfire Hurricane. It's that but not limited to part that bites you in the ass. 1 minute the special counsel's looking at a failed land deal, and the next thing he's collecting vintage blue dresses. So we're going to be dealing with that, and I hope in a somewhat indirect way, Suman, that I've addressed your question. With the subject line, Hunter, David in South Carolina, Stan, sends this along. Bill Barr's daughter works at Treasury to protect Trump's tax returns and loans at Deutsche Bank. Rudy Giuliani's son gets $90,700 a year to be White House sports liaison with no experience. Precious Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump Kushner and Jared Kushner used the White House as a $413 million bonanza. Andrea Junker says it was never about Hunter Biden. Because that goes back to what I said last night. Whatever they do, whatever the maggots do, it is something they, or whatever they complain about, it is something they have already done or plan to do. Plain and simple. Now, COVID Caligula is trying to run a pressure campaign against the Supreme Court. Well, it's not going to work on Elena Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor or Stephen Breyer or probably not even old balls and strikes John Roberts. But Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, he's a perjurer. And he's a sexual abuser, just like Trump. Might work with him. Sammy Bad Breath Alito. Maggot through and through. And then, of course, there's Ann's boy, Neil, who owes his seat on the court to Trump and Mitch McConnell. And Brett Kavanaugh, another accused sexual abuser. So he would be perhaps simpatico to Trump. Birds of a feather and all of that. And then there's the religious cult member, Amy Covid Barrett, justice handmaid, who only has her unqualified seat on the court because of Donald Trump. And so this afternoon, or this morning and this afternoon, he went after SCOTUS.
If the two senators from Georgia should lose, which would be a horrible thing for our country, I'm the only thing that stands between packing the court, last number heard, 25, and preserving it. I will not, under any circumstances, pack the court, capital P, capital C.
Yeah. So, 25 new justices. Okay. Wonder where he heard that. Oh, one of those spirochetes swirling around betwixt his ears, that's where.
If the Supreme Court shows great capital W wisdom and capital C courage, the American people, capital A, capital P, will win perhaps the most important case in history, and our capital E electoral, capital P process will be respected again.
All trying to get the court to side with him and the Lulus from Texas and 17 other states, and just declaring any last lingering notion of democracy in the United States deader than Pharaoh's cat. Yeah. So here we are. Oh, and by the way, QAnon, you know, QAnon is forever throwing hissies about, you know, the Democrat sexual predator cannibal ring that operates in the basement of that pizza joint. What ain't got no basement? Yeah. And it really gets them worked up. And to the point that they've actually done damage to real legitimate organizations like Save the Children, who try to help children in peril, children in crisis, by stealing from them their signature line and using it as a hashtag, Save the Children. Well, enter into this little tableau, Ben Gibson. Ben Gibson is from Louisiana, Stan. And he ran in a four-way race for the U.S. House of Representatives seat in District 4 of Louisiana, Stan, and lost to Representative Mike Johnson, who was reelected. Well, Gibson lost, but he was still an active duty member of the United States Air Force at Barksdale Air Force Base. But I don't think he is or is going to be for much longer. And I'll explain why in a minute. But way, way, way back in January of 2020, when we were kind of still looking forward to a new year, he identified himself, Ben Gibson did, as a QAnoner. There were actually 27 candidates who were QAnon assholes on the ballot. 5 from California, 4 from Georgia, 3 from Florida, 2 from Illinois, Arizona, and Delaware, and 1 each from Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Oregon, Ohio, and Texas. Yeah. But also, Ben Gibson of Louisiana Stan. And Ben Gibson of Louisiana Stan, despite his determined social media posts in praise of and support of the imaginary paranoid fantasy that is QAnon, well, he lost. Yeah, he did. Poor, yeah, too bad. But by God, he never gave up on wanting to save the children. Because Q is out there and running a covert operation to take down all the Democrat pedophiles, and that's why Joe Biden's wearing that boot on his foot to hide his ankle monitoring bracelet, because he's already been arrested by Donald Trump for being a pedophile. It's hard to even say silly shit like this without shrieking, but they really believe this crap. Well, for as much as he cared about exploited and sexually trafficked children, apparently Ben Gibson had a hard time not doing exactly what it is that QAnon claims the Democrats are doing. Because according to WGNO, he got taken down day before yesterday, Ben Gibson did, by law enforcement, arrested in Louisiana, booked on 4 counts of, wait for it, you already know, don't you? Sure. Child pornography. You betcha. And he used the QAnon hashtag repeatedly in his Facebook campaign. 4 counts. Kitty porn. The dateline was Bossier City, Louisiana. Also arrested was Jared Kutz, not Jared Kushner, Jared Kutz, 30 years old of Bossier City. Granted, Ben Gibson got all of 6.3% of the vote in his election. He came in last, and even came in last behind a pair of Democrats, which says something in a place like Louisiana, Stan. The Louisiana Bureau of Investigation Cybercrime Unit, the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigations, the Bossier Parish Sheriff's Office, Caddo Parish Sheriff's Office, and the Bossier City Marshal's Office all joined in on the investigation that took Ben Gibson down. And wait for it. There at Barksdale Air Force Base, Airman Ben Gibson, he was a recruiter. And according to Barksdale, he has been removed from his recruiting duties. We hold our airmen to the highest standards and will be working with the Attorney General's Office and the Office of Special Investigation and Local Law Enforcement during this investigation, officials at Barksdale Air Force Base said. Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry released a statement yesterday and said, "My office is committed to using every tool we have to protect Louisiana's children, unless it involves feeding them or taking care of them after they're born, because we're good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual maggots." And, of course, both of them are out on bond now. Two counts of pornography involving juveniles under the age of 13, possession, among other things. So there's your moral high ground of QAnon. And there's another maggot out there, another QAnon goonie, who is really, honestly, and for true, no kidding, going to the Congress. This is the idiot from Colorado who says she's going to be carrying a gun when she's inside the Capitol, because freedom. Well, it turns out she's been busted for not disclosing her campaign coordination with, of all people, the campaign of anointed booger-eating future king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. Yeah, no kidding. Hasn't even been sworn in yet. And already into the sleaze. Oh, that's cowbell worthy. Todd in South Carolina, Stan, offering up early puntroversy so early in the evening. Yeah, I know. That's good, puntroversy. Let's see. So here we are at the end of the first hour of the program. And we will be getting into the stupidity of the Trump lawsuit, I presume. There's a lot of laughter out there, and deservedly so. But I just can't write it off out of hand because, again, as I've said before, I know who's sitting on that court. And I know they got potentially five votes to agree with that stupid lawsuit. So, I mean, you get my unwillingness to just dismiss it out of hand. If this was normal America, in normal times, I'd say, yeah, this is going to get laughed out of court. But the court is packed with clowns right now, maggot clowns. And I don't think you can't say anything definitively anymore. James in Illinois, kitty porn cue ball. He was researching a book. I'm sure we'll hear that any minute now. Brother Deacon Asa says, sounds to me like Airman Ben Gibson of Barksdale Air Force Base joined the wrong branch of the service. It sounds like he was really into... Oh, God. Apparently Jeffrey's contagious. Sounds like he was really into semen. Oh, when will it end? When will it end? No, Billable Rick. I did not say that Jared Cuck got arrested. Jared Cuck, though, that's pretty good. Sure you're not referring to Cucky Jerry? Ah, Becca. And Darlene reminds us, don't forget that failed land deal in Arkansas was brought to D.C. by none other than Pepe the Frog Barr when he was Attorney General for H.W. Bush. Republicans are so predictable, and the playbook remains the same. They always go back to the same damn playbook. I hope the Dems start dueling investigations of McConnell, Graham, Iwanka, her creepy husband, Beavis and Butthead, et al. Let's have at it. I'm willing to bet that Hunter is far cleaner than any of them. I'm ready for the skeletons in these Republicans' many closets to see the light of day. I agree with you, Darlene, entirely. And we're about to, and it's an odd coincidence. At the same time, and I mean, I looked at this earlier today and just went, what? So the horn, our little community over at Podbean alone. You know, that's where we put up the podcast. We put them up on iTunes, put them up at White Rose Society, put them up at Podbean. So there'll be some redundancy in case one fails, and they do most often because there's a PEBCAC problem. Problem exists between keyboard and chair. But today, we crossed the all-time 300,000 download mark on Podbean. I mean, that's certainly not Joe Rogan experience numbers or Alex Jones. But for a little shoestring liberal progressive independent operation with no massive corporate support, that's also not too shabby. So I'm proud of that. But it also comes at the same time that, according to the Washington Post, and thank you to Lou in PA, the country's running total of deaths, meanwhile, climbed past 291,800 on Thursday. And in fact, between today and tomorrow, we'll cross 300,000 dead. And that is a hell of a lot more grim milestone. And we have surpassed, according to the Washington Post, the number of U.S. service members killed while fighting in World War II. And I thought about that a little bit today. Do you remember the shocked horror that engulfed this nation in the aftermath of September the 11th, 2001, when we began to slowly wrap our minds just around just how many people had died? 3,000 in one day. And God almighty, the Republicans were out there screaming, and so were a lot of Democrats. We must have revenge. We need to turn Iraq into glass. That's what they say, so that means they want to use nuclear weapons, because sand melts, becomes glass. We want to glass them! But a week ago yesterday, 3,000 people died of coronavirus in one day. And those same Republicans who, scant 19 years ago, were hollering for Iraq to be turned into glass, or Iran, or frankly, everybody but Israel, as far as they're concerned. Nuke them all and let God sort them out. The same number of people died of an avoidable, preventable virus a week ago yesterday. And the same people who wanted to glass the Iraq spent their time barking about how I ain't wearing no mask because Jesus can't see my face if I wear a mask. And besides, it takes away my freedom. In the short span of 19 years, that is as good an indication as any of the depths to which this country has descended. It is shocking, and it's depressing. Did you know in Wuhan, they're back to normal? Just back to normal. People died. They dealt with it. They did what was necessary they welded some people into their houses. Apparently China has assholes just like we do, only we don't weld them into their houses. We have a Supreme Court that says that they have a First Amendment religious right to make the rest of the country sick. Freedom! Yeah. Taiwan, you know, our buddy Horst there has remarked, talking to Dr. Bill, for instance, about how Taiwan handled it. Taiwan has been touched, but barely touched. Vietnam managed it. Thailand managed it. Australia's returning to normal. New Zealand has returned to normal. But America, the land of the freedom and the home of the stupid, a country that 50 years ago put a human being on the moon, we can't convince citizens to wear a fucking mask. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a downer, but that depresses me. 300,000 dead, says Brother Deacon Asa. Is there any doubt as to why the death toll coincides with your podcast being listened to 300,000 times? They heard the program, and they decided to end it, Bob. Half of those deaths were just due to Giraffe's puns. Oh, Jesus, God. There's no let up. All right. That gets a jingle. And so, having crossed into the second hour of the program, a reminder, Joey and Giraffe have the Jam the Lean on America's Future challenge on the table. Joey and Giraffe will match whatever comes in. So you send in 10, they match with 10 up to $100. And on top of that, Joey and Giraffe will send $100 to the Warnock Ossoff campaigns to help save America by getting those two Senate seats in Georgia. And do it in the name of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And along the way, help to knock down our $600 fundraising hole for the evening. So we are thus far, let me check, because sometimes I don't get my notifications quite right. Thus far, I think we're at zero on that challenge with a little bit less than 2 hours to go on it. So if we took that down, it would be fantastic. All right, then. Let's run over to the old holler tree wherein we keep the extraordinary ordinary roundtable and check in with Sparky, who is not pulled in space today. Not a perfect day in Northern California, Sparky?
No, it's a great, great day. It's looking like it's going to rain, but it's not going to rain.
You'd prefer for it to rain, probably.
Yes, of course.
Right.
This is the time of year it's supposed to rain. We get a little antsy when it doesn't.
Yeah, I can imagine. Antsy and, well, you know, your nickname is Sparky.
Yeah, well, we were under a fire weather watch last week for a couple days because of the frickin' winds.
Jesus.
So,
I got a
couple fires in Southern California. I know.
We got up to 65 degrees here today. I think we'll probably have snow tomorrow, but we got up 65 today. Clear blue skies, fantastic. It is 69 degrees. We're just a scant few degrees south of what we need for naked radio in here right now. And now the Horn Family Community Congregation can be grateful for those missing degrees.
It's not video, Bob.
I know, but it still requires brain bleach.
I remember the one time you tried video a long time ago.
Well, I tried it while I was down in Alabama too, and that worked out sort of well.
Oh, that was on Facebook, wasn't it?
Yeah. Video on the kind of connections we have here, not so much.
Yeah, well, you were doing on a Ustream or something like that. I forget.
Does Ustream even exist anymore?
Isn't Ustream kind of like the MySpace of video?
I think that's exactly what it is, Steve.
Oh, I want to ask Bob, since I had to step off last night, did anyone take up
No, and it amazes me that no one has. Maybe they're just a little leery of meat through the mail.
I'm going to tell you something. I got to say this. I've put up a couple of good offers here in the last few months.
Yeah, you have.
And
it's vacuum packed. It should be good.
Well, what was it, Shan?
Yeah, Shan. That was
apparently
the, that was
loved. The, of, I mean, I don't know if Shan told you, I ended up sending like 3 dozen bagels.
Yes, I did hear. That's fantastic.
Because they had a big deal for, I don't know, some damn holiday or maybe just, you know. And then Darlene, I just sent out the candy. You know, I don't know if she told you. And I don't know what happened, but they don't sell she wanted the dark chocolate chips, potato chips. They don't sell dark chocolate anymore. They used to because I've had them.
Oh, well, still, yeah. Milk chocolate will be all right. I'm a dark chocolate guy myself. But
yeah, I like it too. But I will say this. I like milk chocolate with the kind of saltiness of the chips. I think that's a better combination than dark chocolate, you know, because dark tends to be a little bit more bitter. But she wanted something. So she ordered the they have salted caramels, dark chocolate covered salted caramels. And I sent her a bonus. She's probably listening right now going, oh, I thought he was going to say the bonus. I'm not going to say what the bonus was.
Oh, now we have a mystery.
Yeah. But I do have your book. I just haven't been able to get the little extra that I want to give you. I just haven't had a chance to do it. Anything else? Something else?
One thing I was going to ask. I don't know if it's everything. All the things I love at Katz's were on that list, except for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The garlic sausage.
You know what? Not everything. See here, the way it works is for places that sell online, like Essa Bagel, which was the stuff I sent to Sean, and the stuff through Katz, it's through kind of a third party.
Yeah, I know. Right. And what, the entire menu isn't there?
I don't think the entire menu is there. Yeah. Correct. But I went through there and I thought, you know what? If I had all the money in the world, I would send, I mean, some of those prices. I mean, one of the prices was like, it was like a whole mess of stuff was like $400 or $500. But yeah, I went through to get a decent something that somebody would like. And, there will be more. I'm trying to do things that are creative, that people may not be able to get where they are or might be a little bit unexpected.
Well, I tell you what, a corned beef sandwich on New Year's Day would be something fantastic.
You know, when I was a kid, my grandma and grandpa used to go up to their place. My two grandparents who died in 2007, it was a big thing. We would go up on, sometimes I would spend New Year's Eve there, and she would make pork and sauerkraut, which we would eat at midnight.
Oh, that's such a thing in some places.
Oh my God. Yeah, I think that is that an Ohio thing or is that a Midwestern thing?
It's also a Pennsylvania thing, like an Eastern PA thing.
Okay. But damn, I don't know. You know what? I don't know what it is about grandmas, but they just, you know what it probably is that they put extra amounts of love in what they cook, which really makes them taste much better. My grandma used to make all kinds. If Tracy's listening, she might cringe at this, but my grandma used to make a mayonnaise cake. Now, of course, you could.
Oh no, mayonnaise cakes, sour cream cakes. Those things are all fantastic.
And it was like the super moist chocolate, and she would make homemade caramel icing.
Oh,
yeah, and she would. I would watch her make it. She would dribble the caramel over the. It's like it was almost like a sheet cake, and she would dribble that caramel over it. You know what, Bob?
We're off and running on the food porn.
Oh my God! It would make your teeth hurt, but ooh, it was worth it. Oh, it was worth it. Fried chicken. Oh, I just remember Grandma making fried chicken and making gravy out of the.
The chicken bit gravy.
Mm-hmm. She'd take the chicken out, and the grease would be in there, and some of the
make
the
roux with the
stuff.
Flour, and yeah, oh heavenly. And and was it a cream gravy or a broth gravy? Did she put milk in there, and then?
Wow, that's a long time ago. I don't remember. I don't remember. All I remember was she and of course she would use a cast iron skillet. And she'd take that chicken out and make that gravy and of course make mashed potatoes, but nothing from a box.
Hell no. Grandma wouldn't be caught dead. No.
And how would she make them? Get out her old KitchenAid, which was probably.
And whip those bad boys.
Whip those bad boys up. Because my grandparents are actually from, or were from. I'm actually was born in the town that where KitchenAid originated, where the KitchenAid Museum is. Bob, I'll tell you.
I didn't even know there was one.
Yes, there is. Yep. Greenville, Ohio. And if you've, yes, that's the Treaty of Greenville, and it is an Annie Oakley, a Little Miss Sure Shot, or as my grandma used to call her, Little Miss Sure Shit.
Little Salty was grandma, right?
Well, that was my mom's mom. She could be a little salty. My dad's mom was...
Salt of the earth.
She was salt of the earth. She worked at a... what they used to call it, the Brethren's Home. It was like a nursing home or back then that was the old folks' home that the Church of the Brethren ran. And she, Grandma would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and her job, she was worked in the laundry and Grandpa was a carpenter. And so.
That's a John Prine song.
Say it again?
That's a John Prine song. Grandpa was a carpenter.
Okay. Yeah, I miss him. God.
Yeah, especially this time of year. I know it's been rough for you.
Can I just tell you, I haven't, my family hasn't gotten together for Christmas since 2007. And the weird thing was, not for some reason, I think all the grievances that everyone had against each other, my aunts and my dad and my uncle, everybody, you know, they kept all that stuff quiet while the grandparents were alive. Because you didn't rock the boat when the patriarch and the matriarch were around. After that, everything spilled over, and I haven't seen that part of my family. And I guess this would be 13 years, 15 years, and probably never will again. But oh shit, I had some great times. Oh, I had some great times and some great food. And Grandma used to make homemade fudge around the holidays, chocolate fudge.
My granny's homemade fudge was legendary in this little community because it was famous because of how she made it. We've still got the table. It's a marble slab table that she would get freezing cold.
Yep. She would turn it out on the marble table. I know that.
You butter the cold marble slab first, then you turn the fudge out onto it. Put the and way back in the day, I barely knew him, but my grandfather would shell black walnuts.
Oh Jesus, Bob! This is some serious. You mean tell what? This
and those
is not
those things are a bastard.
Oh,
to
I know.
Crack.
They're really hard too.
Yeah, and it's not a true nut. It's a drupe, like a pecan is, a D-R-U-P-E. Mm-hmm. And so you got to dig the nut out of there, but they're so sweet. They've got a buttery flavor that an English walnut can't even touch. And so he would have been cracking walnuts, and so they'd fold that in, and she would sit there and stir, just stir and stir and stir, work that fudge, work the air into it, and then scoop it all into bread loaf pans.
Oh man, Bob! And
literally cut it like slices of bread.
And it had a creaminess, like sometimes if you don't make fudge quite right, it's kind of gritty from the sugar.
Yeah, grainy.
But this had I know exactly what you're talking about. It had a creaminess that.
And when she went to clean it up, there wouldn't be anything left on the slab. The butter would be gone, and it would just be clean.
Oh,
and I've got that recipe somewhere, I've even got the table.
But you know what, though? It's hard to make it like they made it. At least, my grandma, she used to make peanut butter fudge, too.
Oh, hell yes. My mother was the queen of peanut butter fudge. And the other thing, my uncle and aunt, and they were kind of proprietary about the recipe. They used to make butter candy.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
They'd roll it out and cut it, and it almost looked like little gnocchi. But it was buttery and vanilla and heavenly. I mean, you would put it in your mouth, and it would just dissolve. Just gone.
Yeah. My grandma, she used to make caramels.
Oh, homemade caramel, quit it. We're hurting people. You realize we're hurting people right now.
I don't, you know, I was just going to say, this is not Playboy caliber food porn. This is like Hustler caliber food porn.
Yeah, this is the real nasty stuff.
This is the nasty stuff. And my grandpa used to make Divinity.
Oh, God. We've just gone into the whole list now.
Let us know when it's going to end.
I think Bob and I need to have a smoke because we're...
No, Bob does not need a smoke. Bob's going to... Okay. I'll do a pouch and start hiccuping. Hey, I did see someone just pop into the room. I think we've got him here. I talked about Trey earlier today and what he had told me. Are you there, Trey? Trey might be looking for the mute button.
No, he's not on the call, Bob.
Well, I clicked him in. Damn it. Okay.
Yeah, but he didn't accept.
Okay, Trey, if you want, just use the button.
Now he's on.
Okay. There's Trey.
I'm here.
How you doing?
How about that? I'm doing good as I can be, I guess.
When did you get the news?
Well, on December 9th is when I took the actual test, and then I got the results back. What is today? Friday on the next day. But I had been on quarantine since last Friday. Basically, my doctor sent me home and said since I had exposure to the manager that wasn't wearing a mask, that I needed to stay home for 14 days. And in that time, I developed symptoms, and here I am. Can't barely walk around my apartment without losing my breath.
And there's that dry cough. Jesus Christ, Trey.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, do you have family you can reach out to, people who can, you know, do for
yes,
you, check
I
in?
I have a sister that is close, and my ex-wife is as awful as I could talk bad about her. She's been really nice during all this. She's been bringing me stuff. Obviously, I can't see the kids because of me being sick, but we do a lot of Skyping, and then we do a lot of FaceTime and stuff like that. So I have people around me supporting me.
Well, that's very good. I mean, it's bad enough to go through it. To go through it without help, I can't conceive that.
But yeah, it's a hoax.
If it is, it's making me super tired if it's a hoax.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's that hoax treating you, Trey?
It just progressively got worse. Like Thursday, we found that she was around. Her husband had it, and then she got it, and then she was at a board meeting somewhere where someone had it. I think she knew. I just didn't tell anybody. And then, like I said, there's me and another person that's in my office that's sick. She had to know she had it.
Jesus.
Which is crazy.
Well, you know, you're the kind of person that Mitch McConnell is thinking about when he wants to protect people who make people sick.
Yeah. And you guys talking about all this food and stuff, I can't taste anything. Everything tastes like cardboard.
I know one woman around here, and I'm not trying to encourage her or anything, this is more like Bob Little Ray of fucking Sunshine. Mm-hmm. I know a woman around here who had it 8 weeks ago. She's over. She's not contagious, nothing. Still doesn't have her sense of taste and smell back.
Well, when my doctor finally told me that I was positive, then she's telling me that down the road I can have blood clots.
Oh,
wait,
Jesus.
What? Blood clots. It's like... Wait a second, blood clots. That's great to know.
So are you keeping the fever down with like ibuprofen or something?
Yeah, I keep it down with like the ibuprofen, and I'm a confess this, but I think the female people out there have been holding back on us. Midol does wonders on this. I guess Midol is for like cramps and stuff like that, but I mean for the headache and for
PMS.
The muscle aches. Oh
it's
my
for,
God!
It's for PMS, right?
Well, it's an over the counter medication. And basically what it is, it is a, it's acetaminophen, or as they call it in Europe, paracetamol. And it's caffeine. It'll perk you up a little bit. And pyrrolidine maleate, which is an antihistamine.
Yeah, I take a couple of those, and I get a little burst of energy, and the muscle aches are gone, and the headache's gone.
Wow.
So, I don't know if that's any good for me, but it works. It's, it takes care of the headache more than the ibuprofen does.
Well, I wonder, but I'll bet the ibuprofen's better on the fever, because generally speaking, ibuprofen is as compared to Tylenol.
Right, yeah. But I was having a lot of muscle aches and stuff, and aches in the very beginning, too, so that helped with that. But then, but really, nothing can give you. Like, after they tell you that you have it, they're like, all right, well, make sure you stay away from everybody, drink a lot of liquid, and if anything crazy goes on, call us. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, do you know? Did they say, "Hey, do you know Donald Trump? We could get you the monoclonal cocktail if you know Donald Trump."
I guess if I did, well, I don't know. I don't have a very good reputation on Twitter towards him, so he probably wouldn't want to help me. He sees some of my tweets; they get pretty crazy.
Well, if your name's not Ivanka, he doesn't want to help you anyways. I wouldn't.
That's true.
You
know.
Hey Trey, sorry to hear about that, man. That really sucks.
Well, it is what it is, but I mean, I was doing the mask and having the gloves and doing everything, and it was just like this woman would just sit at my desk with her mask around her face, and chin just talking to me. I'm thinking to myself, this is normal? This is okay?
No.
So you were you were masked in the whole works, and you still got it.
I had a mask on, and they had a pair of plastic gloves where we were at in our thing, and she would come in. Her office was across the way from ours. There's two people in my office and two people in hers. She's got, like, an assistant, and then me and the other person are, like, the people that basically what I do is I lease out apartments and houses is what I do. So we're kind of considered essential because we have to show the apartments to people.
Okay.
They're not. The property managers all been sent home, except mine. She kept wanting to come in, wanting to use the printer, wanting to go to the bathroom. She wouldn't leave.
And so you didn't have the authority to say, pull your fucking mask up.
Yeah, I mean, every time I see it, it's chin strap. Like awkward. We used to talk about a chin strap. Every time I see that, I think of Bob used to say chin strap all the time, and that's what she's doing.
Wow. Trey, do you have any way to check your blood oxygenation levels so you know that you're, you know, getting the oxygen you need and so forth?
I have this little thing on my watch here that kind of does it, this iPhone watch thing. But I also had a friend of mine was a nurse, and she gave me this little, I guess this thing that fits on your finger here.
It's called a pulse oximeter.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. That's very important because that's a symptom that sneaks up on people. You know, they think they're okay, and then all of a sudden their oxygen level's down to, like, you know, 85 or something like that, or who knows what, you know, 85%.
And I've been really congested too. I guess that's part of it too.
Yeah. Oh man, that's.
So I'm just kind of hanging out. I don't mean to spill this all on you guys, but
no,
you
know, man, it sucks.
Let the family know.
Sorry to hear that, Trey. It's awful.
Hey man, don't even, like Steve just said, don't you even try to apologize.
Oh, man, we're hurting with you, bro. Blows, man.
It could just easily be us, Trey, you know?
Yeah. Trey, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
What kind of mask were you wearing?
What is the surgical masks that they give you?
The blue ones?
Yeah. Okay. Don't get me wrong. They gave us a bunch of them, but I guess it's the 95% one, it says here.
Oh, okay. Thanks, friend. I appreciate that, man.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. They're the disposable ones. I don't think they're not like the M, whatever those are, but those are disposable ones like they wear in hospitals.
Well, we're all pulling.
Hey, Trey. This is Chris. I have a question for you, too.
Yeah, hey,
Trey.
Chris. Go ahead.
Can I ask what the political persuasion of the person who gave it to you was?
Do you really need to ask?
I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count.
Wow.
Stop the steal. Stop the steal.
Yeah. Hi, way.
Everybody.
My first day, the first question she asked me if I was Christian. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, what?
I don't think you're allowed to ask that question.
I know you're not, and I relayed that to the upper authorities, but you know how that goes.
Yeah,
you,
sure.
Hey, Trey, you know what you should have said? You know what you should have said? Who's that?
Well, I said I don't believe in imaginary friends. I guess that wasn't the right answer.
Ow. I believe in Zeus.
Well, that probably explains why she was sitting there virus spewing at you.
That's probably why I didn't think about it. She was coming after me. You're right.
You know what you should have said? I mean, I'm just trying to think of and wait, where was the? Where do you live? Which part of the country?
I live in northern Kentucky, which is right across the river from Cincinnati. And I live Hamilton County. Yeah.
Really?
I live in Covington, Kentucky.
Oh yeah, I'm from Dayton.
Okay.
I used to go to the Reds games.
You're from Jersey? I'm from Jersey. Yeah, what exit? Hey, you people. Hey,
there's somebody else on here that's from Kentucky Stand, too, that I hear. I don't know if they're on the phone or not.
Kyle. Yeah.
I think Kyle's from a little bit more Kentucky.
I don't want to give anything away. I think Kyle's actually across the river. I think Kyle's actually across the river. He's Kyle in Kentucky Stand, but he's actually Kyle in Ohio Stand.
Okay.
Hey, Trey,
I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. Ohio.
Kentucky area. I'm in the area Boone, Kenton, and Campbell. I'm in Kenton County.
Trey, you should have asked her. You mean that Palestinian brown skin?
The day laborer.
That said that no one should ever be judged.
Yeah.
Oh no. Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
My big thing was when they would ask, I'd always say, "Well, when you ask me, I don't. When you don't ask me, I do." They don't get that one.
I have two better answers.
Okay.
You could say, you mean Yeshua? You mean am I a follower of Yeshua?
Yeshua.
Or you say, I know. You'd be like, who? Sounds like a Muslim name to me. Or you say, yes, I'm Catholic.
Well, I think she's Catholic too, though. I don't know.
That doesn't sound like Catholic to me.
It could be Amy COVID Barrett.
Yeah.
It could be Amy. She could be Amy COVID Barrett Catholic.
The prayer packers or whatever the hell they're called.
Oh yeah, God.
Catch the breaking news? Did you guys catch the breaking news?
I'm looking at it right now.
Yep.
What happened?
Dave number 11 just sent me a 3-word email. Texas suit dies.
I knew it. I knew it.
Well, that made me feel better.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Bob, it's time to play the Reverend. It's time to play the ha 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 from Reverend Cockknocker McPrivate Plane.
I think you're right.
Might have been the Supreme Court's reaction to Donnie asking to present testimony before the Supreme Court.
Hold on a minute. We'll celebrate.
He's got such a natural laughter, I tell you. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So does that mean Paxton will still get his pardon? Or what's...
He might. Probably will. He probably earned his pardon there. He has to work on Governor Abbott for the state pardon.
Well, that's a gimme. But even the Washington Post introduced the story by saying, Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, who badly needs a favor from Donald Trump. Yeah. What's that? The Texas lawsuit was dismissed? Is gone? What? And the best part of it at all is that took place in Texas.
There you go.
Yeah, so, yeah, but Bob.
Yeah.
Our two congressmen are still treasonous, though.
How's that?
Just signing on to that.
Well, true. Oh, what? LaMalfa?
Yep. Your congressman's on it, too.
Oh, I know. She's an idiot.
All 118 of those bastards should not be seated.
126, period. Steve.
There's a 26. None of them should be seated.
Well, no, there's no. There's a Democratic member of Congress who's thinking just that very thing.
Who?
Bill Pascrell?
Yeah, Bill Pascrell.
Yeah. Signing onto that was borderline treasonous. I mean, let's just call it what it is.
Pelosi's not going to hold him accountable, I'm afraid.
Representative Bill Representative Bill Pascrell Jr., Democrat, New Jersey, argued on Friday that the 126 Republicans seeking to overturn election results should not be seated in Congress. Because, among other things, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy joined that bunch of treasonous bastards.
Bob, do you think they're shitting their pants right now?
I think some are, but people like Lindsey Graham think they're in the clear because they managed to win re-election.
Yet, can there be a countersuit against South Carolina?
No.
And Texas?
No.
No.
No. For the shenanigans they did? No.
No. And I, you know what? I want to actually say something that a lot of people don't seem to seem to know. I've heard a lot of people talking about that there should be some sort of lawsuit against Trump for what he did for COVID. And I have some very bad news for you. It can't happen.
You're talking about willful disregard for life?
Yes. Can't happen. It's basically, Rick's right. It's basically sovereign immunity. And I looked it up. In the case of Nixon versus, I don't know, whoever it was, the Supreme Court held that a president is absolutely immune from suit for official acts while in office.
Yeah, forget that. It's not qualified. I mean, it's absolute immunity.
It's absolute immunity.
Sometimes that applies. Usually it doesn't apply. Usually it's a qualified immunity, like with regard to police officers' alleged violations of civil rights. But for legislators, absolute immunity for statements they make on the floor of Congress.
Well, that's in the Constitution. But
well, I do want to take a moment and note that I said I would be very, very happy to be wrong. I am thrilled to have been wrong about this.
Yeah.
But
is it unanimous?
Bucks, huh? No. It's a $5 bet. Don't worry, Bob.
Hey, Bob. Hey,
we'll
everybody.
We'll let you slide this time.
Yeah.
You're going to do it with your $5, Rick.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, your magic 8-ball didn't work this time.
I didn't use it.
Oh well, see, that's there. You go.
No, I did this one al fresco, just based on the fact that we've got theocrats and perjurers and sexual abusers that usually are able to form a 5-4 majority in the court.
Right.
I'm reading the AP. I'm reading the AP coverage right now, and I'm trying to see if there's
a statement.
Well, I'm trying to see if there's a vote count.
Who would love to hear what Trump said when he heard it?
Oh well, I mean, you hear that little turd say fuck once. You've heard it all.
True. I just imagine like
you know what Trump did this afternoon. He released a new campaign ad on Twitter.
Campaign ad?
It's made by the Donald Trump campaign. Talking about how great he is and everything, and how he got more votes than any other president. And
That sweet, sweet maggot cash going on.
Yeah, but he got like 7 million votes than his opponent. That's the problem there. Slight detail.
Hello?
What the hell?
Yeah, who's that?
Someone needs to turn your volume down.
Yeah, you're breaking it.
It's hot it up. Way too hot, man.
Turn it down.
I think I did. Hello?
Yeah, hey, Kevin.
That's better. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Hi, all.
How you doing?
I said I'll try to call in. I'll try to call in on a sleepless Friday. Here it is.
Ah, okay. Okay. Just a little bit of detail real quick. The court's order was unsigned.
You know what that means, don't you? I suspect it was unanimous. Nobody wanted to say anything.
Sure,
it's like the last one.
Yep.
Okay, but this goes to the bet between me and between Billable Rick and me. The court stated, in a very short order, Texas has not demonstrated a judicially cognizable interest in the manner in which another state conducts its elections. All other pending motions are dismissed as moot.
Y'all,
short and sweet.
Mm. Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
That's probably the closest. Well, first of all, let me say this. That to me, and you can correct me because you know this better than I do. That has John Roberts written all over it. Mm-hmm. That has John Roberts saying, "Listen, fuckers."
7-2. Dave number 11's digging around. 7-2.
Yeah. Well, this has John Roberts written all over it, where John Roberts says, "Listen, fuckers, we're not taking this because this is bullshit, and I have a legacy to protect."
Yeah. 7-2. Yeah. Wonder who the two were.
So was it COVID Barrett?
COVID Barrett was one of them.
And Drunky Boy? Jesus.
I don't know. Maybe I'd almost guess Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy.
Oh, yeah.
It should be impeachment. That should be grounds for impeachment. For voting positive for this bullshit, treasonous bullshit.
Again, if I may interject.
Yeah, Kevin, go. Please.
Hey, by the way, Kevin, your screen's sharing on Skype.
These people got to live in Washington. Okay? And the rest of your life is a very long time to be living in a city that you're hated in. I said this before.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit last night about the nature of living in D.C. when Darlene and I were talking.
Yeah. So...
a constitutionalist, that shit went right out the window, didn't it?
Well, I mean, we don't know it was her. We're guessing. Go ahead, Kevin, please.
Yeah, you know, it's like these people gotta live and work, and I know the nature of the beast in D.C. You could be red meat Republican, and they're hanging out in DuPont Circle at the other side of their face wearing a rainbow flag. I've been around these people. They live double lives. You know.
Okay.
So
wait, Bob. We don't know for sure it was her.
No, it's an unsigned opinion, but it was 7-2.
Okay, the two will never reveal themselves then.
No, but I do. Hold on. I do want to go back for a moment to Bill Pascrell's argument. About not seating the treasonous members of the House. And he's got a compelling argument. Because he used as the basis for his argument Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which reads, "No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof."
That means Ted Cruz is gone.
It should. It should mean that 126 Republican members of the House of Representatives are gone.
And don't forget that Ted Cruz's dad was in on...
to deny them taking the oath of office?
A majority and the Speaker.
Well, there you go. Done and done.
Kevin, can you turn off your camera?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. yeah.
Hey, Kevin, where are you located again?
Cape Town, South Africa.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's nice. A little far.
Yeah.
That's a poke.
Ahead of you guys.
Do you speak Afrikaans?
No, my wife does. I know a few words here and there, but like where I live is a very English speaking area.
Okay.
You know, you'll hear some Afrikaans in the street slang, mm-hmm. but not really hardcore Afrikaans speaker.
Is it hot there where you're at?
In the daytime, yes, but in the nighttime, it can get pretty cool. Put it this way, the way the summers and winters are here, it gets hot enough, but it doesn't get you depressed. You don't go through the summertime blues, because before you know it, it can flip in a second. And then it's the same thing with the wintertime. It can get very cold, but then all of a sudden you'll have a warm day every few days. So it can be interesting. You can get all four seasons in a day sometimes.
Did it take you some time to get used to the constellations, the different constellation down there? It's different, right?
No, not at all. I've been living overseas for like 10 years in different countries.
It doesn't matter to you. It's old hat.
It doesn't really matter. You know, I Bob can tell you my backstory that I just had enough of the States back in 2008, 2009. And I just left. And I haven't regretted it since. You know.
Wow. One of my best friends is South African.
Where from? Where?
He's a sailor. He's got a captain's license and everything. He's a chief engineer for those huge tankers.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think we've got our answer. We've got our answer as to who the two traitors on the Supreme Court are. Thanks to David in South Carolina, Stan, for this. Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas issued a statement saying they would have accepted Texas's case, but saying they would not grant other relief.
Fuck those two.
Ugh. The red hot poker. Yep.
You want to hear something, Bob, that you're going to hate?
Yeah. What?
Alito judged the moot court competition in my law school.
Ew. Oh my God.
Ugh.
When he was on the Third Circuit.
Did it smell like sulfur? After he left the room,
see? Yeah, it smelled like a big pile of shit and had flies flying all over his chair.
Like cat pile. Yeah.
Hey, I have a question, Chris.
Yes. Yes.
Are we connected on Facebook? Are you the Chris who's on here?
Yeah. I think we are. I think I got like some kind of friend request and I accepted it or something like that. I think it was because we got a mutual friend with Darlene, maybe. And then Bob, I'm hooked up with Bob, and I'm hooked up with Steve, Georgia Stan Steve, and I think Rick, too.
Yeah.
I think Rick and I are connected. I don't think Steve and I are.
Did I send you any of my songs from my band?
To be honest with you, I have really been staying off. I'm just staying off. I'm just staying off of social media.
I'm not on Facebook, Steve.
Period. That's because you're a communist. I tell you what, I'm kidding.
Well, we've got okay. So further detail.
I've noticed you're not there, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, further.
You're on Pravda.com. Is that where I can find you?
No, I've been staying off because I'm trying to move because my old roommate. Everyone probably heard that my roommate tried to choke me and threatened to stab me. So.
Oh, I did hear about that. Jesus Christ.
We've got more detail. We've got more details now. And in a way, this kind of goes back to what I said, and I may have been more right than I thought in one respect. So Alito and Slappy would have granted the motion for the petition but would have denied any relief.
What the fuck does that mean?
Hold on. The other said the others just said, oh, hell no, at all. So what that means is by 9-0,
no relief.
Not one justice agreed with Texas and the other traitorous states and Donald Trump.
And you know what Trump said right after that? Can I fire them? I put them on the court. Can I fire them?
Oh, jeez. Can you say lifetime appointment?
Sorry, Rick. Go ahead.
Appointment. What does that mean to you? What part of lifetime don't you understand, Donald?
I was going to say, says the guy who's shown no loyalty to any other human being is an entire miserable fucking life.
Yeah, but I had a television show where I said you're fired to people a lot in between rails of Adderall and shitting myself.
What part of you lost do you do not understand, you stupid orange fucker, man?
Can I ask everyone a question? I gotta and tell me if y'all agree with me or disagree. This is the first time I've actually had a real live exhale since November 3rd.
I think that's true.
Same here.
Same here. Yeah, I agree.
They're still going to try to bring the fight up on January 6th.
Well, when it's, you know what, Rick? I actually emailed Bob about that. I think on January 6th, they're gonna basically challenge every single fucking slate of electors.
Yeah.
I'll play that stupid game that Randy's been talking about.
So they have to get a senator to sign on to their grievances.
They've got senators. Cruz.
They may have Ron Johnson too.
And Cruz and Cotton. Oh yeah.
But I think Cruz, they need to get Cruz because what he did was an act of treason.
He's a fucking coward.
Well, I mean, let's go back. Wait. I know we all want to talk at the same time because this is exciting news. But let's try to do a better job of going one at a time.
I will shut up for the rest of the night.
No, quit that. Don't do that.
But I'm serious. I want to
use the raise your hand feature.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. No, I just wanted to go back to Bill Pascrell because what he said, he not only cited the 14th Amendment, but he said, stated simply, because this is one of those things that feels like a moment of genuine patriotism, and it deserves to be praised for what it is. Stated simply, men and women who would act to tear the United States government apart cannot serve as members of Congress. These lawsuits seeking to obliterate public confidence in our democratic system by invalidating the clear results of the 2020 presidential election undoubtedly attack the text and spirit of the Constitution, which each member swears to support and defend. Consequently, I call on you to exercise the power of your offices to evaluate steps you can take to address these constitutional violations this Congress, and if possible, refuse to seat in the 117th Congress any members elect seeking to make Donald Trump an unelected dictator. That's some powerful stuff.
Wow.
And it's all true, too.
Oh, and David from South Carolina, Stan, points out, Rand Paul said he may object, too. Because
Roger's got his hand raised.
Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, I got a question. Are the people who deal with the Electoral College, the existing as it stands right now legislature, or are they the new legislature that becomes sworn in? I guess that didn't make sense.
Steve, billable.
What I'm looking at here is I know we get a new Congress before we get a new president. So the question is who are the people that oversee the Electoral College vote? Is it the present legislature or is it the new legislature?
No, the 116th Congress will end. It will be dead. It will be history at midnight on December 31st.
Okay. So if people get into a fisticuff and only seat those people in the House of Representatives who, in other words, not any of the 106 or 120 or whatever, and only seat the people that didn't violate what you just talked about, all of a sudden, the House of Representatives drops down to 335, of which 226, I believe, are Democrats and should have absolutely total control over the counting of the votes for president. Now, the Senate is up to the ones for vice president. But as far as president goes, if the House refuses to seat the traitorous members, it would take longer to run that through the courts than what would be required to seat the new president.
I don't know that the court has jurisdiction.
I think it becomes a matter of the political branches to deal with that, Roger.
Yeah, that's strictly political question stuff.
I'm just saying it would be an interesting little twist if Nancy Pelosi refused to give the oath of office to those 106 members and proceeded to deal with the Electoral College, the Republicans wouldn't have very much to say about it. Now, I realize that's pretty hardball bullshit that Democrats aren't known to do hardball bullshit.
Well, a couple of those people aren't even going to be there when the new Congress comes.
Yeah. I mean, I think what it comes down to is if the Republicans persist in their refusal to acknowledge that Biden is the president-elect, even after December 14th when all the electors meet in their respective state capitals, I think the Democrats are going to seriously figure out, okay, what are we going to do now? They've really got to game plan this, because the Republicans, I mean, if they're not going to acknowledge defeat after December 14th, they're never going to acknowledge defeat, which means that you have to expect a major, floor fight, a floor fight on January 6th. And so the Democrats had better get their strategy and their game in order to combat that bullshit.
Well, this also runs up the temperature on the conniptions that I was talking about earlier with the harassment of the electors for Monday.
Right. Yep. I mean, I wouldn't be half surprised if protesters, maggot protesters, don't start to show up in front of the Supreme Court justices' houses, especially the six conservative justices, or at least.
No. The U.S. Marshals. That is something up with which the U.S. Marshals will not put.
Oh, but you could still try and protest.
You can try.
Yeah, you could try. Yeah, the maggots will try.
But remember, way back, remember when those sweet, loving little grannies who carried the photos of aborted babies outside a Planned Parenthood in Massachusetts violated the Massachusetts buffer zone law?
Yeah.
And it went to the Supreme Court, and by a 9-0 margin, the Supreme Court said, nope, Massachusetts can't have a buffer zone rule. But here at the Supreme Court, we've got a 90-foot buffer zone rule. Yeah, it's good to be us.
Right. It's good to be king.
So we have entered the third hour of the program, and this is kind of a weird thing. And I don't know why, but it's playing out that way. I don't remember a time when we haven't gotten so much as a $10 contribution in the first 2 hours of the program. And I hate fundraising, you know that. But it's how this program stays on the air. And so, we came into the program with a $600 fundraising goal, a fundraising deficit, yesterday and today. And Joey and Giraffery kindly put a $100 challenge on the table, doubling your contribution to the Horn and sending another $100 to Warnock and Ossoff. And if we understand and we do how brutally important that those races are down in Georgia, disincentivizing Joey on that is not a great idea. So, if Joey's challenge gets met, then we've got at least $200 knocked out of the 600, and that gives us a $700 fundraising goal for Monday.
Hey Bob, put me down for 15.
Okay, so that's 15 for Chris. Thank you so much. And Arnold just jumped in with 10, so that's 25 of the 100 that's met. And that means we got $75 to go. So thank you both to Arnold and Chris. Thank you both a ton for that. And I know how hard it is. I know how hard it is this time of year. I understand completely. And I just wish there was a, I wish there was another way. I mean, you know, I wish there was some left-wing think tank that said, oh, here's a pile of money, run your radio network, and don't worry about it. We're never going to ask you to account for it or anything, because that's how right-wing wingnut welfare works. If you get $3.29 from the from Progressive Think Tank of America in 6 months' time, they're going to want a close fractional accounting of the $3.29 and itemized according to whether you spend it on paper clips or push pins. So that's, you know, that's just the reality of progressive broadcasting. But thank you to Chris and thank you to Arnold for jumping in. That gets us started. And I just really didn't want that challenge to just go unmet. So thank you both.
Bob, did I lose a bet to you about the Supreme Court decision?
No, you didn't.
Count me in for 25. What the hell? Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bilbo. So that gets us down to 50. And so maybe Joey and Giraffe will have to pony that up to Ossoff and Warnock after all. That would be wonderful.
Actually, I think Libby, they have the Giraffe. I think that's the correct word there.
Libby just took us down to 25 to go. That's huge. Thank you. Wait a minute. Libby took us down to 25. And Trevor. Thank you, Trevor. Trevor just took us. Okay, the challenge has been met. So, whew, that's a great weight off the mind. And if we can keep it rolling, then another $100 the night knocks out yesterday, and we're only looking at $600 on Monday. So, hopefully we can do that. Thank you to Chris and Arnold and Trevor and Libby. Thank you all so very, very much for jumping in. I appreciate it more than I can express. Sorry about the interruption there, but
any more challenges on the table, Bob? Asking.
Not at present, no.
Okay. Dustin was asking in the chat.
Sorry, Dustin. That's it for now.
Hey, does anyone in the Horn family know what the final tally was of how much Bloomberg spent on his shitty campaign?
I never did see a final number, but my God, it was huge. And
what
I guess, yeah, it was, but he kept on spending, and that mattered. And hopefully he's spending.
Yeah, that's true.
Hopefully he's spending till it hurts in Georgia.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I mean, if you're Michael Bloomberg, you have enough money to buy every ad space on every media outlet in Georgia and never count the cost.
Can he buy up a bunch of fucking radio stations from Sinclair?
Only if they're for sale.
Yeah, well, there's that, right? Right. When
this comes, and I know Steve in New York will understand this. This comes from the old Bear Bryant, Woody Hayes theory of recruiting. Back when there were no limits on the size of your squad, you might have a blue chip quarterback, and you already had a great quarterback, and you didn't necessarily need him, but you'd sign him and just bench his ass. Just to make sure that, you know, Michigan didn't get him, or Auburn didn't get him, or LSU didn't get him, and that happened all the time. What would there be to stop? And I probably shouldn't even whisper this into the pink little ear of the goddess of irony. But what would there be to stop a mega gabajillionaire like Bloomberg from just buying the entire schedule of every? Or say, you know, the entire schedule of the Atlanta market.
Yeah.
Because sure. I don't care what ad rates are in the Atlanta market, you could buy the entire run of schedule and you know, he probably makes that in interest in 15 minutes in any given day or less. It's dirty pool, but you know.
They're playing dirty.
Yeah, dude, we've talked about this before. No more butter knives at a bazooka fight. No more.
Trump put out another video on his Twitter.
Oh, for God's sakes.
What is
He's
it?
He's losing his shit now.
Oh yeah. Read it. You know he's still in a temper. Yeah, please.
It's all conspiracy theories. showing suitcases of ballots added in secret in Georgia, Wisconsin, dead people voting, Nevada money for vote scheme.
Wait, did he say anything about all the USB ports Rudy was talking about in Georgia? There are USB ports everywhere.
Fraud, Michigan. The evidence is overwhelming. Call your legislatures. Demand that they fight for honest elections. Text fraud to 8802.
Can't wait to see a frog march.
So there, he's getting more money that way from Texas.
Is there any real, this is Arnold jumping in, is there any evidence at all, or is it just psycho lie after lie? I mean, for the Supreme Court not to even want to bother with it, it's awesome. But I mean, the constant right-wing dribble that there's fraud and it's unfair, and I'm starting to hear it from real people. I'm going to fix a tractor in the morning of 1960s a dozer, and the guy who owns it, I've known for 15, 16 years. He's a Trump guy, and he's like, you know, we need a fair election. You know, I'm all for Biden if it was fair. Like, what the fuck?
That shit wears you out, bro. It does, man. It wears you out. Go ahead, friend. I'm sorry.
There's even a website, too, DonaldJTrump.com/fraud.
Yeah, well, these are, and I'll bet you somewhere on that page there's a donate button.
Oh, there's got to be. I heard there were people that were beamed down from Jupiter that voted Democratic.
No, God damn it, Chris. Those were the multi-limbed amorphous aliens from Norblap 9. Get your shit together, will you?
Okay. Sorry for my fake news.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the people from Kolob, they were the ones who voted Republican.
Yeah, well,
they voted for Romney.
Man, when you've got that sister wife vote, that dead ghost sister wife vote from another planet, how are they ever going to unseat you? Thank you. Thank you, Gino. That's huge. Thank you, Gino. We are now halfway to being fully funded for yesterday. Thank you, Gino. And thanks as well to Ralps for the challenge that if somebody will kick in 10, she'll kick in 10. Ralps is a tremendous, tremendous ally of the program, also serving as the occasional Horn ad hoc research department. So if there's 10 bucks wandering around there, Ralps will kick in 10, and that'll get us down to only 30 bucks to go to finish yesterday's funding. So that's huge. So, there's 50 remaining, and then maybe we'll start on tonight.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Real quick, and also for Darlene, if she's listening, and if Carol, if she's listening, the stuff that the messages I sent to you over Facebook Messenger, if you would, please let me know how many of those items you want and the cents, S-C-E-N-T-S, that you want. And you give me your second choice in case the store doesn't let me buy, you know, so many of them.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you can take me off the list, by the way.
Oh, okay. Fine. Okay, I get it, Mr. Hillbilly Elitist.
No. It was like a little Christmas miracle. My buddy up at the Wiggling Pig.
Awesome!
Sent me a photograph today and said, "I got two cans of Lysol spray with your name on it, buddy." and
you know what?
I ran in the door and immediately just went wild doing a dance to winter, a dance to the winter solstice, leaping. Well, there's not a lot of room for leaping in the studio, but leaping and spraying and you know, the windscreen on the mic and stuff. So, you know, I'm happy.
So you were the cans of Lysol were LARPing and Smolikin' and Grabolatin' and spewing over, but it was a good LARPing, Smolikin', Grabolatin', spewing.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
Hey.
By the way, I'm putting together a Trump pandemic glossary, and those words are going to be on it.
Oh, good. I think we've needed one of those along with a Horn cookbook for a very long time. And hey, this is happy news. Thanks to Billable Rick and James. Thank you both. Yesterday is fully funded. So that gives us a chance in 45 minutes to try to put together a sure enough Horn community-made Christmas season, holiday season miracle.
I smell a miracle.
The miracles they do happen around here, and there's $300 to go to make the miracle.
Awesome. Can I'm going to say something. God, I'm talking way too much. But
no, you're okay. You're okay. You know, you show up once a week and you talk. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah. You know, look, everyone knows how I am with my. I have this kind of love-hate relationship with my church. But I have to say something. I really have to give it to old Pope Frank for actually being on the right side.
Oh, you're going to get shit now.
Okay. I mean, let him. Okay, fine. I'll take all the shit. But he's been on the right side of the pandemic.
Yeah, no, he has. And frankly, if he was, you know, he probably, I mean, I'd appreciate it. You might, too. You're even closer to it. I would appreciate it emotionally. You would appreciate it probably scientifically and epidemiologically. The Archbishop of the Diocese of Brooklyn that brought that shitty little lawsuit to the Supreme Court.
He's a bishop. He's not an archbishop.
Okay. Well, that bishop needs a righteous defrocking, because where in the Gospels does Jesus say, "Go ye therefore unto all the world and spew viral particles and LARP and smolik on each other"?
You forgot grabolate.
We'll take grabolate. That's it. I'm talking Catholic stuff. Grabolate is not in the Vulgate.
Oh, okay.
In the King James.
And I gotta, you know, as much as I cannot stand Cardinal Dolan, I really can't stand the guy. The Archdiocese of New York, which is different than the Diocese of Brooklyn, has been right on this too. I mean, I don't mean this to be a prayer meeting Wednesday on Friday, but my church in particular, we're about one-tenth at most capacity. And all the priests wear masks during mass. And you know what it is? It's like when you have, where my parish is on the Upper West Side, which is extremely educated. We're right near the Juilliard School. Anytime you have educated people, it's like, it's not even, I was talking to one of the priests the other day, and it's like everyone was wearing masks, and it was weird. It's like, it's not even weird. It's like, it's not even an issue. It's,
well, it shouldn't be.
Listen, I get what the issues everyone has with my RCC, which I'm like a George Santayana atheist. I'm not an atheist, but an agnostic Catholic. But for the most part, I give credit where, like you say, Bob, you got to give credit where it's due. And frankly, Pope Frank has been, I mean, going back to Easter and even before that. I think you said this one time, I think, isn't he a biologist by trade?
By education, yes.
Yes. So, and he's a Jesuit. So, you know, Jesuits, at least the modern Jesuits, are really like into education and science and stuff. So,
well, did you ever watch the Netflix movie, with Jonathan, what's his name? And,
yes,
the two popes. Yeah, because that addresses, you know, when he decided to bounce out of college and go be a Jesuit.
I think you mentioned this. I watched it. I'm not normally into shows like that, but I honestly thought it was one of the best.
I loved it. Oh, and while we're doing TV viewing tips, let me just announce that Agnes and I followed the crowd, and last night we started watching The Queen's Gambit.
Okay, you need to watch. Is anybody here other than me watch The Crown?
Not that.
I have. Great show, Queen's Gambit, but it's fantastic.
Hey, Bob, when are you going to watch The Tiger King?
What?
Shut up, Bill.
Is it The Tiger King? That's the one with all the guys, the gay guy wearing the mullet, right?
Yes, that's the one with the gay guy with the mullet, if that's how you
Who
need it.
Who said that?
That was Billable Rick.
Pardon, know that.
Rick.
You know that?
Rick.
Yes.
Rick, you know what? That should go before the disciplinary committee.
Bob, my hand is raised. This hand raising thing ain't working.
Well, it doesn't work because I don't see it. I got 50 tabs open. I need Sparky to tell me there's a hand up. But you told me that you got your hands up, so go.
I just wanted to put out a PSA to all the Horn family. Wednesday night, 8 hours of my life, I will never get back. And this is totally off topic, but it bears telling. My computer, I got a new computer. It was capped out at 100 megabytes per second. I pay for 350 megabytes per second. I tweaked every freaking connectivity setting in here. Nothing would fix it. Sometimes we can't see the forest of the trees. Did anybody want to take a guess on what it was?
Oh, no.
You didn't have it plugged in.
No. The internet cable. I had a cheesy, skinny Ethernet cable going to it. And I couldn't understand it because my old computer was getting and it was maxed out at 1,000. I'm like, what? WTF is this maxed out at 100? What is going on here?
So what kind of craptastic Ethernet cable did you have?
It came
was it elite?
With
was it
real Cat skinny. Five? It was brand new in the bag, so I thought new is good, right? It came with the Kinetic box that came with my cable service, which I don't use because it's wireless.
But hey, Steve?
Yeah. I wanted to throw that out there. If anybody ever runs into that problem, because my old 12-year-old computer was getting it capable of receiving 1,000, why the fuck is this one only capable of receiving 100 when it's brand new? It was the cable.
I'm going to tell you, you know what you cable, needed? Man.
So did you get a Cat 6 cable?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, I've got a ton of them laying around the house, Duncan, probably at least 4 or 5. But it just didn't dawn on me.
It never occurred to you to like to do the obvious.
To do the obvious, right. Sometimes we truly can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
I put in a good cable and boom, problem solved. After 8 hours of tweaking every connectivity setting there possibly one could think of.
Cables are a pain in the ass.
Well,
yeah.
I had a tech moment this last week or so. I ordered this device from Amazon, thinking it'd work with my TV so I could use the Bluetooth headphones. It's a transmitter because the TV has a headphone jack, and I have a cable that ran off the headphone jack. And you plug it in this transmitter. And then I thought, how am I going to get this thing to work? And then I thought, well, I got one of these little plug-in USB ports. So I plugged it into an extension cord, plugged it in there. After a few tries, I got it to mate with the headphones. Because I thought, when I first got it, I thought, I can't make this thing work. But then I figured it out. Just dawned on me after a day or so. So, you know, everybody has brain farts, Steve.
Well, yeah, I've got my own little tech battle going on right now.
chatting with Microsoft.
Yeah, 'tis the season. Hey, welcome to people who can't understand their technology. I'm Bob.
You know what we all need? We all need a 9-year-old. We all needed like a 9-year-old nephew.
I got grandkids just down the road, but I can't do anything. I mean, yeah. Because it never works over like Zoom or whatever. But no, what it boils down to is, you know, I pay for storage on the Apple Cloud, and I pay for their maximum amount, 2 terabytes. Not terribly expensive, but you know. And my phone won't back up to the cloud. It says, you know, you're out of storage. Horseshit, I am. I can sit there and look at the graphic representation. I know I'm not out of storage by a long shot. So then I thought, kidneys, man, kidneys. I'll work around it. And so I put iTunes on a laptop that I've got a secondary drive on. Whose windscreen is that?
I just muted myself. I have my fan on in my office.
Oh, okay. So I thought I've got this laptop that's got a terabyte secondary drive on it, and I thought, okay, well, I'll back it up onto this hard drive. But iTunes, I can't figure out how to tell iTunes to do the backup on that 1 terabyte drive instead of trying to do it on the 128 that runs the machine that boots the machine. Pain in the ass. So there's that. Thank you, Ralphs, for the challenge. Thank you. Thank you to Tom in sunny San Rafael. That's awesome. We are now $70 into we're 70 bucks into, or we got 70 bucks to go. No, here. There's 270 bucks to go to finish this evening. There, that, I think I'm finally clear now. And let's watch it fall further. Thank you, David. That's 220. Thank you, David. And thank you to Pat, taking us down to 195. This is smelling more miraculous by the moment. So 195 bucks to finish the week, and that's huge. I cannot, I'm getting close. Thank you so very, very much. And Tom in sunny San Rafael said, ka-ching, just sent you 10 bucks. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Thanks a ton. And so, you know, 195, that might be doable in the next 36 minutes or so. It'd be fantastic. As to Ethernet cables, Lee in New York says, at work I was getting 40 Mbps. I thought they got cheap internet. Months later, I found that it was a Cat 5. My boss got a replacement Windows 10 computer with 4 megabytes of RAM. Yeah. 4 meg of RAM. Yeah.
Hey, Bob, do you remember when, like, a 40 megabyte hard... I remember my dad had a 40 megabyte hard drive at work with his old IBM PC XT.
386.
Yes, with his amber, with the amber-colored monitor and reports. My dad was a CFO of a nonprofit. The accounting reports he used to run would only take 8 hours to do.
Sexy. I still remember playing Zork on an old Trash 80 or whatever it was.
Yeah, TRS. It was at the TRS 80 or the what was it? The There was the
Commodore 64. Oh yeah, yeah.
The Commodore 64 or the Atari 400, the Atari 800.
You know, that's so funny. We were talking about that on the Blue Dot Family on Sunday. We were talking about all those old computers. And there was somebody that didn't really understand what we were talking about with floppy drive. And I'm like, yeah, the 5 1/4 were actually floppy. And I had
Leisure Suit Larry.
Shitload. She was like, you could play games on those? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And you could do other shit on them, too.
Who remembers when
the flying game?
Who
remembers when the operating system was on the floppy drive?
Oh, hell yeah.
With that guy. Oh. Yeah.
I remember my first-person World War II fighter aircraft game.
I remember that, Bob.
And you'd push the space bar to shoot the machine gun, and the machine gun in your plane would go ka-click, 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 ka-click. Yep.
Yes, that was after Flight Simulator, right, Bob? Flight Simulator was like maybe one of the first things to come out, if I remember. Do you remember that thing?
Yeah, oh yeah, Microsoft Flight Sim. But I wasn't into that nearly as much as I was the World War II aircraft stuff.
Shooting up, yeah, right.
Well, let's all go back to the Cape Crew.
Wait a minute. Flight Simulator came out? I didn't know Flight Simulator was gay.
Wait, Oregon Trail.
No. Don't you dare. That's a good nerve.
The bell has spoken, as Todd says. Yes. Okay. No. Oh, and by the way, I missed something. And Gino, thank you very kindly for reminding me. Gino says, I dedicated my 50 buck contribution to Ken Paxton in honor of his utter failure. Now, see, that gets a real cowbell. And
can we just send all these people orange jumpsuits, just make sure we got their size right?
Yeah, but make sure that the fluorescent orange shower shoes are well saturated with athlete's foot.
Hey Bob,
the soap on the rope is the right height and everything too, right?
Bob, because of that last wonderful, awesome cowbell and comment, I'm gonna send I wish I could do more. I'm just going to send an extra 10 bucks in for that. So,
oh, wow.
Actually, no. I'm going to do a $10 challenge because it's always better to do that because it gets somebody to give some and we can double it. So I'll put a $10.
All right. Well, that would take us down to 175.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a Ken Paxton, may he serve 10 years in prison, $10 challenge.
Excellent. How about the Ken Paxton for prison $10 challenge?
There you go.
Because Ken Paxton just, yeah.
Yeah.
Supposedly he faces a 99-year sentence.
That would be lovely.
Ooh, I like that. That's good.
999.
Yeah. Keep him alive.
That's why all this was to seek the presidential pardon. This whole stunt was created to try to muster up to get a pardon.
Yeah, Ken Paxton and Trump bump into each other, and Trump says, "Pardon me," and Paxton says, "Oh no, pardon me."
I have a question for everyone because I saw it the other night. And, you know, pray that we win Georgia. This may be within reach. Michael Moore's Planet of Humans. I saw it the other night.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Not a fan.
Okay.
First of all, let's be clear. It's not Michael Moore's Planet of the Humans. He produced it. It was directed by somebody else. And what that thing was, really, Bob? What that documentary was an attempt to vilify a whole bunch of sustainable renewable energy industries on the way to being a vehicle for complaining. The purpose of a documentary is to, in my eye, is to shine a light on something and maybe even propose a solution. And as far as I could tell, watching Planet of the Humans, it was just, 90 minutes of pure nihilism.
I get that. Yeah, and I felt that way, too. I honestly felt that way because, to me, the green revolution will have its problems, just like any revolution does. But we cannot continue going the course that we're going. I was just wondering, was it just me? Also, but one point they do say is that, like, a lot of the environmental problems that we have is due to the fact that there are too many damn people on the planet.
Well, yeah, I've got a story right here, Kevin, that I kind of hung on to because every now and then I'll see one and keep it just because it's interesting to me. This article comes from Common Dreams. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a recent announcement. Global human man-made mass exceeds now all living biomass. Now, you got to take a minute to just sort of take all that in.
I kind of get it.
Well, the best way to visualize it is for anybody who has ever seen Idiocracy.
I have.
You know the beginning where it shows the mass avalanche of garbage? Because
yes.
We just generated so much garbage it collapsed and took society with it. Mm-hmm. Well, it's that. The stuff that human beings have made outweighs every other thing on the planet. And that's a real mind fuck. Yeah, it is. That's a real brain twister to ponder.
Because the reason why I'm getting at this, as you know, I live in Africa, and many of the traditional societies, there is no birth control. Okay, and the fact of the matter is, some of the biggest families you'll see. 20 kids, it's not uncommon for somebody to have 10, 15, even 20 kids, and they're all living in townships.
One of the most ironic aspects of that, Kevin, is the fact that that is not a function of traditional, historical, and prehistorical African society. Because
a lot of these people were hunter-gatherers. They would lose half their offspring, or
it's not just that they lost them. they were very careful about maintaining their populational numbers because they understood, you know, perhaps without having the highfalutin scientific term, they understood capacity at an existential level. And you can literally fuck yourself right out of your life. And so in the stories of the or the accounts, the studies of the Kung and the San bush folk of the Kalahari.
Yes.
You would find that women would typically breastfeed their children up till the age of 4 or 5. And while it is not surefire and foolproof, that generally keeps it keeps pregnancy at bay because of what it does to the, or at least that's the way it was posited in those early stories, because they managed to keep their population down that way. We know, for instance, that the Shawnee people, indigenous people of North America, they had two councils. They had a war council and a peace council, for lack of better terms. And other tribal peoples did, too. The war council was led by the men, who were constantly, you know, being men. Oh, let's go kill somebody. Oh, I want to hit him in the head with a rock. But the war council could not act without the consent of the peace council, and the peace council was run by the women. And if they said no, no meant no. And along the way, the women's council would also maintain population levels. You can have a baby. You can no babies this year. We'll have babies next year. And they maintained their population numbers that way. And the irony of that in regard to North America and the Western Hemisphere generally is that in 1491, we're now fairly well convinced that this was the single most populous part of the world, and it was the most successfully populated. There were more people in North and South America than there were in Europe and Asia in Europe, Asia, and Africa in 1491.
Oh, yeah, I read those books, yeah.
And so, you know, when you talk about those families that'll have 20 kids, that is the pernicious effect of European colonialism being imposed on pre-industrial tribal society.
Yeah, and because I was going to add the fact that kind of nature, kind of, for lack of a better term, culled the herd. But you see, you got to understand, part of apartheid, what it did, and the same could be said about colonialism, but especially apartheid. You got to understand, within two generations, in many cases, in most cases here in South Africa, they went from being a hunter-gatherer people to an urban people.
Displaced people.
Yes. Okay, because it's not uncommon for here to see, if you walk into any bank or office building, a guy in his nice Western suit, okay, but his grandfather is living somewhere in the bush, the hunter-gatherer lifestyle. Those extreme, you know, in lifestyles. So, but again, they take a lot of that and bring it into the Western world, which unbalances things, which is not their fault.
No. There is nothing sadder than people who have had their entire culture stripped away and just left to fend for themselves. I mean, we did that all across the Americas.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is why to this day, in so many instances, there are so many problems on the reservations, because.
Yeah.
Because, look at what a disaster the Philippines are.
Yeah.
It's fascist. It's disastrous.
Yeah.
It's our fault.
And God, I hope, that's another thing for the list when Biden does take office. I hope he's going to just, you know, he doesn't have to stand out and scream into the microphone or anything, but just quietly send a message to the Dutertes and the Bolsonaros and the Erdogans and the like that, whatever it is you had going on with Trump ain't going to happen with us.
I hope he doesn't, especially with the Saudi royal family.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. But then again, we have a nasty habit of presidents walking through the bluebells holding hands with the Saudi prince and kissing him on the mouth.
Yeah, well, they didn't care for Obama that much.
Oh, no, they hated it. They hated him. It was the one thing that the Saudi royal family and psycho Bibi in Israel agreed on. They hated Barack Obama.
Yeah. Because
Obama was a Shiite. That's why.
Yeah.
He was a Kenyan Muslim, slurper. Get it right, Steve.
Yeah, he was a Shiite. Yeah. That's why.
The last time I was there, which was about 2.5 years ago when I was still working there, you know, I would do like 3-month stints there. Oh, they loved Trump. They thought Trump was like a godsend. And they used to call Obama, you know, an apostate. So assholes of a feather flock together. That's all I can say.
That's the damn truth.
And, you know, not to generalize, there are exceptions to this, but there are two kinds of Saudi males. They're the princes that you will probably never see, and then you have the ones who think they're princesses, and those are the ones you have to deal with every day. So, that's life in Saudi Arabia to a certain degree.
And you speak from experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
There are always exceptions. There are always exceptions. You'll find some very fine Saudi people, but a bulk of it, and a lot of it is due to being hammered over the head with religion. Okay. Parasitic economy. And, you know, and in a way, okay, and this is where it kind of vilifies the whole welfare thing. A lot of these people are heavily subsidized.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And they don't ask questions, where are these subsidies coming from? And again, they're only getting a pittance compared to what the 2,000 plus princes are getting.
You know, sooner or later, you get a little prince heavy. And then shit can go sideways. Oh, hey, back onto the old tech thing just for a minute, because we had some input. Lee in New York said, don't you be going old tech with me. I programmed a Xerox Sigma 7 at college on punch cards. Ouch. And Tom in sunny San Rafael, old computers. Who remembers CPM? CPM.
I posted that. It came on a Capro machine where WordStar came on 1 5-1/4-inch floppy disk, and then you saved your documents onto the second 5 5-1/4-inch because it had two slots, but the entire word processing program was on 1 5-1/4 called WordStar. Even had a dictionary in it.
Oh, I remember WordStar.
My dad gave me tell me if I'm wrong, Roger. My dad gave me, it was a box, and it had like a little keyboard template for keys that you put around your keyboard to tell you like what the F1 did and all that kind of stuff.
Well, the K-Pro I had was in a metal case and the keyboard unclipped, and then you brought it down and you pulled the cable out and plugged it into the back. And then you had your 5 1/4-inch floppies that everything came on.
Jeez.
Well, I used to know how to play Simon.
Oh, God, Simon. Kevin, what is Simon?
Do you know what Simon is?
Hey, hang on. Kevin, you got a note from Darlene in Connecticut.
Okay.
Awesome having Kevin on Friday on the front porch. He brings such a unique perspective. And thank you. I mean, I know you're up late, and I do appreciate you taking the time to join in the group.
Well, well, it's my. I've been trying to do this for days. It's just, you know, and it's my, you know, this is my honor. Trust me. And by the way, Bob, I'll sort you out next week.
Okay.
You know, I just need a few days.
No worries. Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed.
And yeah, then my first DOS machine was a 286, and everything came out of the command prompt until I found it was a brown bag software, which is one where you got the software, and if you liked it, then you sent them some money. That was a precursor to Windows 95. It gave you an ability to call up programs without having to type everything in on the command line. And before those two computers, in my Fortran class, and I think it was about 1968, might have been 63, I took a class at the university where we were learning computer programming, and we had to do the punch cards. And the computer took up one room. They converted an old dormitory into classrooms and, well, classrooms and offices. And they broke out the wall and took two dorm rooms to install the computer. And they had to break out the end of the hallway to bring in the machinery because it got lifted up and then rolled into the room. And there was a computer operator. And you did your punch cards and put them in a slot and came back the next day and got a piece of green and white paper with your cards wrapped up into it. And it came back and said, you have a syntax problem on card 22. Didn't tell you what it was, just you have a syntax problem on card 22. So now you have to go back through, read all the cards, redo card 22 to get it right, and resubmit your program. And the next day you'd come back and say, oh, you have a problem on card 25. And then you get to re-deal with your program.
Wow.
I remember a bunch of my classmates who were in the computer science program at college sitting there poring over those long reams of fanfold paper and those punch cards and me sitting there looking going, uh-uh, no, I'll probably never own one of those. And let me just real quick, Steve, your challenge was met and then some by Herbert. Thank you, Herbert. That is tremendous. So we're actually down to, let's see.
Which Steve? Deacon Steve or
no,
Brother Usher Steve?
Yeah, Brother Usher.
Okay.
Your challenge was met and then some. Okay. So that takes us down to 135 to go to finish the week.
Awesome.
Thank you, Herbert. Thank you. Thank you. Okay? Thank you very much. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
Hey, Bob, can I jump in with a viewing tip along the same lines we're just talking about here? It's a British show, and it's called The IT Crowd. And it's been around at least 10 it's at least 10 years old, maybe 15, and it is freaking hysterical. You might even recognize a few of the actors. But it is so funny.
The IT crowd?
The IT crowd. You will love it. Everybody on this call will definitely, everybody in the Horn family will love it with all this computer talk.
Well, Agnes is going to be thrilled because, lo and behold, it turns out that, and I didn't know it for the longest time because we just binge-watched it early on, another episode of The Mandalorian has dropped. Protect the Child.
Yeah, I got two to go to get caught up. It last week's and this week's, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to. Last week's was rough.
No, don't say a thing. Oh God.
No, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to, I'll just tell you this, Chris.
Oh fuck.
Agnes was very distraught.
Oh no.
Hey, let me ask a question. I'm a huge fan of British comedy, British shows, and particularly British dark comedy. Anyone on the same page with me?
Yeah,
absolutely. British comedy is fucking, it's the best, definitely.
I have a really good British comedy, The Vicar of Dibley. I don't know if anyone's ever seen it.
Never heard of that one.
It's excellent. It's funny. It's really funny. And there's another, it's a dark comedy called The Misfits.
Not the band. It's I actually happened on it on maybe it was UK Net. I have a VPN, so I get UK Netflix, Canadian Netflix, all that shit. But look it up. It's called Misfits. I think it ran for maybe 5 years. It's a super dark comedy, but it's I just thought it was great. I'm not quite sure why I liked it, but I did.
Spinning Image. Did you like that?
Never heard of it.
Oh, that's
Spinning
the
Image.
That's the
my goodness. Stuff.
That's funny shit. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
That's pretty fucking funny. Yeah.
I don't. I own. We'll say it again.
There's another one kind of like I think it's called Newsoids. Kind of similar to Spinning Image. It's done
spitting,
with puppets.
Is it Spitting Image?
No. Spitting Image, and I'll get the name. It's Newsoids. It was only on for 2 years or so.
Oh, I'm thinking of Spitting Image was the one with the puppets and everything, right?
Yeah, but they came out with a new season this year. So they have Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings and all the and you know, Gove and all the new politicians are making fun of Trump.
Right.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Hey, I have a question. Is it me? I always find that British. A British series, they don't run for like 20 or 30 years. They run for 5, 6, 7 years, and then they end.
Except for this one. Spinning Image was like 1980 to 1996 or something.
Yeah, they were doing Reagan and Thatcher.
Yeah, but Steve, I think you're right, generally. Like, Newsoids was 2 years.
Well, because the British can actually write scripts and come up with new things.
Yeah.
One exception that I can think of, Steve, is Doctor Who, of course.
Doctor where?
Doctor Who?
And,
who? What?
Doctor
what? Like, Steve, what was the name of the show you like? Because I haven't seen
it. Misfit. It's called Misfits.
Okay, because I've seen The Crown. I've seen, Queen's Gambit too. But I've seen The Crown.
Oh, I tell you, we are. Don't spoil it for me. We don't. We're not at the end of Queen's Gambit yet. We got, I think, three episodes to go. But
what is it about?
A young girl who's orphaned finds out that she's a chess genius, and she. In theory, it's something of a feminist storyline, but amazingly, every turn she's helped by a man. Have you noticed that, Bob?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you'll see more.
What I saw in it was it's based on a book, of course, but it cleverly takes, or it looks like it takes the. Boris Spassky versus
Bobby Fischer
timeline and transpose it, it backs it up in time and makes for some much more interesting characters. And of course I noticed a couple because now, you know, since I started talking to Dan Fisher again, I watch everything differently. And I noticed a couple of gaffes early on when Beth as a young girl goes into the drugstore. Oh, what was it? There was some product, and I was like, nope, not in 1959. Damn, no. But generally, it's a compelling storyline.
I bought a chess set since, and I bought several books on chess. I'm one of those.
It has not made me want to play chess because chess always just annoyed me.
But I heard some people in England review it and they viewed it as a feminist peon. And that's not to say it's off-putting in any sense of the word. I didn't take it that way. But again, I think you'll see that she's at every turn she's helped by men, ironically. So you'll enjoy the ending.
Agnes and I have been speculating about how it ends, and I wouldn't be surprised if she was right. We each predicted a plot point last night. I said, no. And she said, no. And it turned out I was right. And then she said, and I said, really? And she said, yep. And it turned out she was right. See, this is how you do it without spoilers. Let's see here. Thank you very kindly to Kevin. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very, very much for jumping in. You just took us down to, goodness me, $110 to finish the week. That's tremendous. Thank you, Kevin. Darlene in Connecticut says, I love the Vicar of Dibley. Also a Black Adder fan. I'm a total pre-Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson, and pre-House Hugh Laurie fan. You can you can catch both in that series.
Okay.
And hold on. We're not done. Yes, it is by British contract law, from what I recall. They release the actors after 2 or 3 years and let them do other shows, and then they resume with the series. Meanwhile, because the computer thing grabbed people, Robert in Australia says, if we're playing four Yorkshiremen, which is just a brilliant reference by itself, I started work on an IBM 370 148 mainframe computer that had a golf ball typewriter log. There was no screen, just a golf ball typewriter printing out an endless system log on paper. To go back through the system log, you tore the paper and took the box of paper off to the corner of the room and went through it. And a punch card input. And a couple of impact printers the size of a Volkswagen.
Fuck, man. You're better off with a passel full of baboons from the zoo.
And then Robert says, and why are you all talking about British TV shows I watched 10 to 20 years ago? British TV series generally run 6 to 8 episodes a year and will run as long as viable, anywhere from 5 to 50 years. And since we are playing four Yorkshiremen with computers, Randy Radar says, you haven't lived until you programmed an IBM 360 assembly language on punch cards. I will take your word for it, because I wouldn't have finished college if I'd had to do that. No.
Weren't those the same punch cards? Never mind. I almost went somewhere I shouldn't have gone, and I'm not going to go there.
I've been watching the old, not so old, the Sherlock Holmes, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, I love that.
Oh yeah, I missed a bunch back then. I probably saw every other episode. I'm going back and seeing some new, to me, new episodes.
Okay, Darlene mentioned The Vicar of Dibley. That leads inexorably to Absolutely Fabulous.
Y'all, that's one of my all-time favorite shows.
Well, you know that you know Dawn in French is the company that produces it.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean the Dawn in French are shit. The Edwina, who's Edwina in that? Real name?
Oh, with the glasses. Yeah. Okay. No, I can't remember her name. The actress. No.
But the other person in that is the one who plays the vicar in The Vicar of Dibley.
Oh, okay.
It's a fucking great show. I mean, it's a really, I mean, I and Bob can maybe back me up on this. I just find British humor, it's just more intelligent.
Wow, don't you think Fawlty Towers was a smarter, funnier, wittier Bob Newhart show?
No. I'm not I'm
going to like that one, huh?
I'm going to take a lot of shit with what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
I was just not a Monty Python fan.
Oh. Yeah, you get a lot of shit for that.
Yeah, I know.
I thought we were friends, Steve.
Yeah. I know, Bob. I just felt that knife in my neck. Yoda. There.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a knife. It was a Thorazine dart.
What, Kevin?
Not even The Life of Brian? If you don't like Monty Python, you have to like The Life of Brian.
No, I'm going to tell you what. I feel like I'm the only person who would sit there in front of any Monty Python either movie or TV show and just be like, wouldn't even crack a smile.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, see, that's kind of like me with Seinfeld. I always felt like Seinfeld spent all its time kicking down.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, you know what? It's interesting you say that, because I always find I find Seinfeld to be like maybe clever or it would elicit a chuckle or something like that. But for the most part, I'd be like, it was good, but much like I feel about Star Wars. I don't like Star Wars anymore. Oh shit, I'm gonna really take some shit here.
Yeah, man.
I'm gonna get a lot of people going, I don't know about you, Steve. I mean, you sound like you might be a communist or something, or maybe
Can I ask you something as a New Yorker?
No.
Is Seinfeld on point as a New Yorker? No.
I just said you can't ask me. No. Of course you can ask.
I think it is, because I'm in New York. I think it's...
Do you think Seinfeld's on point in the way
I mean, in New York? Seriously, but Chris, what do you mean by on point? I mean...
There's a lot of what I would say is mannerisms and, stereotypes.
Depends on your community.
It depends. It's very Upper West Side centric.
Okay.
Like, yes. You know the restaurant they
have? I wouldn't
have
a clue what that means, yeah.
No, but it's the Upper West Side is
very
like the
Manhattan, very, if I may say, like Jewish Manhattan humor.
Like Woody Allen type of deal?
Woody Allen-esque, yeah. It's like Woody Allen in a half an hour. The funniest parts of Woody Allen.
Yes. Yes. Right. I would say the only caveat to Kevin I would give is that it's very Upper West Side secular Jewish.
Right.
But again, as a New Yorker, and like, okay, if I may interject, I'm sorry I'm bogarting the conversation.
No, you're not at all. Go, man.
No, Kevin, you're not. Okay. You're not at all. Please don't.
I've been in a lot of those situations because Jewish culture in New York, you cannot avoid it. Even though I come from a Caribbean background, you know, my neighbors, were Jewish, and
Kevin,
Jewish.
Which part are you from? New York?
Yes, I'm from Brooklyn.
Oh shit! I didn't know. My office is in Dumbo.
Okay. You know where the Brooklyn Children's Museum is?
Is that near the Brooklyn Museum or the Botanical Garden?
I live in that neighborhood. Right in the middle of the four. Yeah, I live four blocks away from the...
It's like Park Slope. Yeah. It's like near Park Slope.
No, Prospect Heights. Heights.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
All right. But, I was born and raised there, lived in a brownstone and all that. But, like, even the part when George had to move back in and Jerry was like...
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. When my first marriage ended, I went through that very same scenario down to a T. Only thing, my father wasn't around because my father passed on many years ago. Mm-hmm. But my mom wanting to help my closest friend and my uncle eat something and all, and the humor.
Oh my God. I'm hearing it now. I'm just hearing it now. Eat.
Yeah. Okay. Even though my mother doesn't have a Queens accent, my mother has a West Indian accent, but it's the same scenario. Oh, it's the
same thing. And I got to tell you.
Yeah, and even like the South Florida thing, you know, if most New Yorkers, middle class New Yorkers, do have a place in Florida.
I gotta tell you, West Indian food.
Yeah.
Oh my God! What
Red Hook is the best? Only New York and Miami, probably.
Isn't there? I remember I went to a some party, and I think the West Indian food came from Red Hook.
Okay, that's not really a West Indian neighborhood,
but all I know is that it's like, oh my God, the food, curry, vegetables, curry, was so
plantains. Oh my God, I love that.
Forget about plantains. So that's pure communist food.
Oh,
but like curry, West Indian curry.
Au contraire, mi tovarich.
And the way they make that chicken, how do you say the jerk chicken?
Jerk chicken and jerk pork. Oh. That's become a Christmas special of mine here in Cape Town.
Hey, Bob, have you noticed we're right back to the food porn as we come?
I think it's any evening here, but particularly I think because of the season and we all get a little wistful for things that we love to eat. I mean, I know so little of New York City, but I do know that if any time I'm there, I know where I can eat breakfast for cheap and have probably the best breakfast in the city. So that's enough for me.
And we've had some pretty good food porn tonight, I got to tell you.
But a little restaurant in the Lower East Side that was recommended to me, and I found and I had breakfast there, and I'm still moved by it years later, called El Castillo.
Uh-huh.
And it's Dominican.
It's, oh yes.
And their breakfast, you know, the griddle fried thick slices of salami, the plantains. It's the fresh squeezed orange juice. Woof. Yeah.
Simple but freaking delicious as hell.
And you know, fucking Manhattan, and you're out the door for $10. And you don't need to eat again for about 12 hours.
That's like stealing in New York.
I mean, if
hey,
you,
Bob and Chris. Family, Horn family, you're not gonna like this.
No.
I just saw it come under the crawl. PGA Tour starting in February is going to proceed with small crowds. One of the main events is going to, they're going to have 8,000 fans on the side.
Well, that'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it'll probably be an event in Florida or somewhere since it's February. And that means, Jesus, I had a story. In fact, I just X'd out of it. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, who sent stormtroopers in after a woman this week for having the temerity to be a whistleblower. I mean, it was a stinking bit of business. But he had a rally, not a mask in sight, another one. And, you know, they don't care. I mean,
they don't care.
This is that time of year. I said to somebody the other day, I don't think I've ever had spring fever before the actual winter solstice before. But I got it. I want spring. I just do. And, you know, I'd love to go somewhere warm, you know, go to a... But everywhere I would go to the beach has assholes on it. Florida, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina.
Oh, Cape Town.
Well,
if you go to New Jersey, you might catch Chris Christie if you go to New Jersey.
Oh, no, because if you know, if Chris Christie was on the beach in New Jersey, there'd be some dude with a peg leg and a scraggly white beard yelling, "Ar she blows from hell's heart, I stab at thee."
Yeah.
Hey,
a beach whale.
Hey, Joey.
Hey, Chris, you know, you're talking about computer programs and Monty Python. Well, Python is the full Monty of the current computer program.
Well done.
Jesus, it never ends.
Well done.
You know, I read a quote where the Queen of England made fun of Chris Christie about him being too conservative.
Well, I missed that.
I'll dig that out for you.
Can you repeat that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just, the Queen Elizabeth II of England made fun of Chris Christie for being so conservative. I saw a quote to that effect. I'll post it for you in the chat room. Some of you guys might like
that. Are you trying to slander Her Majesty?
No, I'm the other way. Chris Christie. I mean, she said, here I am, someone who represents a, whatever, 500-year-old institution. I wear a crown on my head, and I look at this guy, and I think he's so far behind the times. Something to that effect, which I was really impressed with. And she specified
Chris Christie. By the way, it's a 1,000-year-old.
Okay, whatever. I'll get the quote for you and post it.
Hey, guys, my dirty habit is Snuffleupagus every Sunday. And Christie on there, he was, throughout the whole campaign and everything, he was just hedging. He was hedging his bets. Well, I think Donald needs to do this. I'm still supporting him, this and that. But when it was over, and it was pretty apparent that it was over, he jumped off that shit like ship like the rat he is. He was one of the first rats to scurry off into the sunset. Mm-hmm.
You can say about Giuliani, he's loyal to the end.
To whom?
Gotta
to himself? To himself and the hair club for men?
Well, he's going to need a pardon, too. They're all going to need pardons.
And, I there are still people out there, New York Attorney General Letitia James being one of them, because I played the clip the other night, who are on board with my early theory. Trump has to resign in favor of Pence so that Pence can issue him a pardon. He can pardon Precious Princess I-Wank-a-Daddy Trump Kushner and the rest of the filthy cabal, but somebody has to pardon him, and the only person who can do it
Pence. Wouldn't that be amazing if Pence's testes grew three times the size and actually said, Donald, ain't
wow, that's an ugly thing. Mike Pence's testicles. You just really did dinner in the Pacific Standard Time Zone.
Well, it's Christmas.
I was looking at DoorDash too to get something.
Yeah, not anymore, right, Sparky?
Huh?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, let's see. We got a ribeye here. We got a chicken cordon bleu. Oh, we got Mike Pence's testicles. Nope. Glenn in San Diego just wrote in and said, for those British TV fans, Acorn and BritBox are great streaming services. One suggestion out of the gate would be the series No Offense, taken from the show description. From the creator of Shameless comes a police comedy drama with fierce female characters and a shrewd, irreverent take on crime. For me, it harkens back to Hill Street Blues, but with female protagonists. That sounds cool. And Randy Radar says, my elderly father flipped out over Yes, Prime Minister, a British sitcom, about how the head of the British bureaucracy consistently outwitted the elected head of the British government. The power of the British bureaucracy was so entrenched that Hitler attacked Britain on a Sunday, a day of the week upon which the British bureaucracy refused to work. Ooh, great little history tidbit.
I posted that for you, Steve, just so you know. I think you'll like the quote. I posted in the chat room. Sorry, Bob.
That's okay. Got a cowbell for Brother John. Greenpeace tried to roll Chris Christie back into the water. Yeah, that was quality. And a reminder as we head out the door, $110 to finish the week. That's where we stand. Shorty in L.A. says, put your right hand on your left shoulder. Got it. Now put your left hand on your right shoulder. You got it. Okay, now everybody squeeze for 5 seconds. You ready? Okay. Okay, Bob, let's do it. Damn, that felt good. Squeeze you later. Smooches to the whole family. If you want, put that hug in your pocket and take it everywhere you need it. That's just so sweet. Thank you, Shorty. After all that sweetness, then we came along with with Mike Pence's testicles. And the next note from Shorty said, "Shorty in L.A. trashing a meatball sandwich from Subway. It just turned into a pencil neck Pence sandwich with retained testicles on it. I did throw it out. Oh, how the fuck did you know I was eating a meatball sandwich?
My work is done.
If I may go back to the British television series,
just a sec, Kevin, because I gotta roll out of here so I can get this thing uploaded. And however, the conversation will continue on Sparky's back porch. Nobody has to go anywhere or do anything or press any buttons. If you want to join in and not be on air, just use the button there at headon.live. The conversation will continue, and I'll be back more in Monday. And I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of more ends out there. I really, really do. It was great talking with all of you. I always enjoy the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. There's nothing quite like it in radio out there, I don't think. And thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks for doing as much as you did to get us caught up this week. Thank you so very much to Joey and Giraffe, and safe travels to you. Thanks for the contribution to the program. Thanks for the contribution to the Warnock and Ossoff campaigns. Thank you so very much. That's just kind as and good-hearted as can be. And thanks to everybody who responded to the challenge. Thank you to our subscribers, both Patreon and PayPal. Remember, that $15 subscription challenge is out there, and I don't know where you're going to get something as yummy as what Steve in New York is offering. It's a pound of corned beef, a pound of pastrami, a pound of brisket, or a hard salami, or a soft salami. Your choice from the iconic Katz's Delicatessen in New York, shipped to you. And all you got to do is subscribe, go to headon.live, click, put in $15, and then click make this a recurring donation or whatever it says there. Make sure I have your address to send to Steve, and there's going to be some fabulous, genuine New York City delicatessen food on the way to you. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. That's That's Brother Deacon Steve, all-around great guy. And thank you, Sparky, moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, brand new, fresh, Malloy, hot and ready to go, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a mere 45 minutes or so from now. The best place to listen to Malloy in first run is at HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't stay home and you have to be out and about, well, I understand that. I'm one of those people. So please take every precaution. I believe our buddy Trey in Kentucky Stan would say the same thing. Take every precaution. Wear your mask. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use copious amounts, liberal amounts of hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance 10 feet between masked people and as far away as time and mileage will permit between you and people without a mask. And for God's sakes, if somebody, anybody, comes towards you saying, Texas does too have a right to tell Georgia how to hold an election, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.